Morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and I wonder whether the Epstein files can be seen as the sort of entire Trump project in microcosm. There's just so much. And even with the millions of documents released over the course of this weekend, it looks as if about half will never see the light of day as long as the current incumbent of the White House and his top team remain in post. But there's just so much that it's almost impossible to sort of pick a way in, to focus on the thing that is most egregious or most upsetting, most horrific. I just want to know how you're handling it and what you think the single most awful thing to emerge is.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, there are calls for Lord Mandelson to face an independent investigation following recent revelations about his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. He resigned from the Labour Party last night, saying he wants to avoid causing the party further embarrassment. Lord Mandelson has denied claims he received £55,000 from Epstein in the early 2000s. And speaking last year, he insisted he didn't know about the late sex offender's crimes.
I was not knowledgeable of what he was doing, and I regret and will regret to my dying day the fact that powerless women were not given the protection they were entitled to expect.
Israel has partially reopened the Rafah crossing between Gaza and Egypt. It's a key part of the ceasefire agreement between Israel and Hamas. It's thought the numbers allowed to pass through will be limited. People who are allowed to leave in the next 24 hours will be subject to strict security checks. The Shadow Foreign Secretary has accused Keir Starmer of humiliating Britain on his trip to China. Writing exclusively for the LBC app, Dame Priti Patel says he went to Beijing from a position of weakness and got nothing in return. The Prime Minister left with deals on visa-free travel, whiskey tariffs and the lifting of sanctions against four MPs. Shadow Chancellor Samuel Stride has echoed Dame Priti's comments while speaking to LBC News.
We've got some loosening of some visa arrangements. We've got a few percent off the duty for Scotch whiskey, but the biggest ticket item, which is the AstraZeneca investment that's been announced of about £11 billion, is actually an investment into China, not an investment by China into the United Kingdom.
Gold has continued to lose value sharply, amounting to its biggest drop in more than a decade. Silver is also down after big swings in Asia trading. Both metals recently hit record highs. It's thought investors turned to the precious metals due to growing geopolitical uncertainty. And drivers can now use and compare petrol prices across the UK using a new Fuel Finder website. The government has made it compulsory for garages to report their prices within half an hour of a change. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 10 points at 10,186. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with spells of rain in the north and in the east. Some brighter spells developing later in the far west of Scotland. A high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Chase is the digital bank that boosts your savings to 4.5% AER variable.
A boost?
Yep. It includes a 2.25% AER boost for the first 12 months.
Are they being boosted now?
All the time. Bedtime, gym time, romantic dinner time. And soon you could boost your way to...
beach time.
Boost your savings with Chase. Search Chase Boosted Saver. 18 plus UK residents available to new Chase current account customers for their first 31 days. 4.41% gross interest paid monthly. Eligibility and T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Minutes after 10 is the time. We're going to wade straight into it. This tidal wave of horror that washed over the world at the weekend as millions more documents from the so-called Epstein files finally saw the light of day, although some containing absolutely hideous allegations against Donald Trump disappeared almost as quickly as they appeared. Make of that what you will. Where do you begin on a morning like this? Do you begin with the news that a man who was the de facto, or the husband of a man who was the de facto Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, was accepting tens of thousands of pounds from a character who, at the time, had already been convicted of sex trafficking. And this is the point that I think gets overlooked, is that the original conviction doesn't seem to have touched the sides of people's concerns or willingness to be associated with him. Your newspaper, if you take one, will also, or your internet news service, will also feature quite a lot of pictures of Peter Mandelson in his pants. Whose life is ever likely to be enriched by images of Peter Mandelson in his pants? And also, to make very brief light of what is a deadly serious subject, who still wears Y fronts? Don't at me. That is not a fa- Yeah, go on then. Who still wears Y fronts? 03456060973. That was a joke. Please don't ring in to tell me that you still... I'll put you straight on to Keith if you're ringing in to tell me that you still wear Y fronts. You're not getting on the radio. The de facto deputy prime minister under Gordon Brown. I don't know, and we may never know, but it seems to me possible that Peter Mandelson was unaware of the extent of his husband's financial dealings with Jeffrey Epstein, but he wasn't aware of his own dealings and his own social dealings. All sorts of allegations swimming around. And then you have Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, as he chooses to call himself, facing a new legal threat, the Daily Mail reports, after a second woman alleged that Epstein flew her to Britain for sex. This is in addition to the Epstein revelations, which feature him lying on top of an apparently rather young woman on the floor of what appears to be Jeffrey Epstein's New York apartment. And then you have revelations or accusations, allegations about Bill Gates, about, you name them, they're in it. The rich and the powerful. And men. Always men. If, like me, and it's been a desperately unfashionable position to pursue in the UK media in recent years, but if you find yourself equally disgusted by sex abusers, irrespective of their ethnicity or religion, if you are as disgusted by the behaviour of Jeffrey Epstein and his mates as you are by the grooming gangs that have a large makeup in many cases of people, men with Pakistani heritage, then you'll be waiting to see what all of the people who've used Pakistani or as they prefer to call them often, Muslim grooming gangs, and indeed attacking the United Kingdom. It'd be very interesting to see how high the horse is that they climb up onto today. Imagine inviting Elon Musk, who's all over the Epstein files, despite claiming that he had nothing to do with the man, inviting himself to parties and expressing a deep desire to get involved in some serious socializing. Imagine inviting him to comment at your rally, ostensibly to protect British women and girls, when these people were consorting with a man whose own conviction for sex trafficking was well established. And I feel quite naive on mornings like this. Do you know what I mean by that? I think it's probably male privilege, actually. I was talking about this with some friends last night, and we've all got daughters, and dads don't really know. Until Me Too came along, dads didn't really know what it was like to be a woman. I saw something online the other day, and it was supposed to be a joke. Like, so what would you do if you were a man for a day? And like, you're supposed to make a joke about sort of, you know, sexy things or, I don't know, football or something. And this amazing woman, I wish I could remember who it was. You'll probably find it. She just said, I'd go out at night. I'd go out on my own at night. What would you do if you were a man for the day? I'd go out on my own at night. We were talking about this last night, and all of the women around the table were. Right, yeah, absolutely. And the men were a little bit... oh, yeah, of course. That took a while. Always men. Always, always men. And, of course, one of the only people to be held to account for these activities, a woman, Ghislaine Maxwell, was dealing essentially exclusively with men on Epstein's Island and elsewhere. So I'm thinking of naivety and venality, naive about the venality of it all. When we first talked about grooming gangs in the north of England, and unlike many people who've made an awful lot of money from pretending to care about the victims and indeed even bringing some of the prosecution cases very close to collapse due to contempt of court. We've been covering this since Andrew Norfolk first started writing about it in The Times in 2011. And one of the earliest questions I asked must sound very naive. What's the correct word to use? One of the earliest questions I asked was about the group dynamic of it. Because you know, or I know, I've always understood that individuals do terrible things. But if somebody invited you to join in, I'm going to sound pathetic now, I used to think you'd call the police. It's we did it a bit, possibly looking back unfairly, focusing upon whether or not there was something in the geographical diaspora from particularly poor parts of the subcontinent that explained why, if your mate was grooming a 15-year-old girl and invited you to join in, you wouldn't phone the police, you'd actually contemplate joining in. But now we learn that you can be an extremely rich and powerful man who is grooming young girls. And when you invite your mates to join in, they don't phone the police. They hop on a plane and come to join you. Who didn't know, honestly, what Epstein was like? Do you think there's a sort of human hierarchy here, that these people actually think of themselves as just better, whether because they're rich and powerful or because they're men or because... whatever the reason may be, they just think they're better. Therefore, these children, these young women are just not, they don't have agency. They have, what do they have? They just have, they're there to serve. Don't laugh, please. So I don't mean it in a light-hearted way, but I was thinking about Henry VIII again last night. I'm fascinated by the way that we were taught. It's not so much the same today, but we were taught that this guy was like a cross between, you know, John Bull and Julius Caesar, the British equivalent. And he was a syphilitic psychopath who killed his wives when they didn't do his bidding. And you think of religion as a yoke, a straitjacket that's used to keep the population in its place. It's what Karl Marx was talking about when he talked about religion being the opiate of the people. The promise of heaven means that we'll put up with penury and poverty, deprivation and exploitation in this world because we get our rewards in the next world. What was Henry VIII's attitude to religion when he wasn't getting his own way? Just abolished it. Just literally cut off all links with the Catholic Church and started his own, like a sort of mad cult leader. Oh, I'll be the head of the church now. Never mind God or the Pope or whatever it may be. And these people bring a kind of sociopathic sense of superiority to the world that we still don't properly... because either you feel it or you don't. Are they all narcissistic? Are they all paedophilic? Are they all psychopathic? Are they all... I don't know. But I just never understood the bit where they tell you what, look at Gisèle Pelicot, that hideous story in France. And even that is easier to understand in some ways because they met on websites that were dedicated to perversion. Jeffrey Epstein is knocking about with bankers and you know who's photographed in these files with what appear to be very young women sitting on their knees, one on Epstein's knee. The bloke who has directed the Melania Trump film that nobody has seen yet, except journalists, as far as I can tell. He's literally there. He was a big feature in the Me Too movement. They're looking around for someone to direct a movie about Melania Trump, and they happen upon this guy who's all over the Epstein files. But do you see what I mean about the size and the scale of it being too big to process? Find me one celebrity who's committed one crime, and I'll find you an uninterrupted array of front pages all dedicated to it. They've gone today mostly for the Andrew Windsor angle, the male in the mirror, the right and the left, the yin and the yang, if you like, of the popular press in this country, both going in on the new woman coming forward to accuse Andrew. And it's Epstein adjacent, of course. Epstein is the man accused of arranging this visit, but it's not Epstein files the story. But they're not quite sure where to go with that. Is it Mandelson? The Mandelson story. Absolutely extraordinary that a senior politician of any hue, but in this case a Labour politician, who perhaps, again, naively, you think might be a little less likely to subscribe to the notion of human hierarchy. They're supposed to believe in equality. That line he said years ago about being supremely comfortable with extremely rich people or whatever it was takes on a slightly different hue now. How naive do I sound when I say to you, do you know, I'm not sure I realised that being rich and powerful provided you with so much impunity. You know, remember when that woman in America talked about the taxes being for the little people just before she got sent to jail? I think her name was Leonora Helmsley. And I remember thinking, but surely the law, I'm such a child, such a sweet summer child, thinking, but the law applies equally to everybody. Let's look at cases in this country. You line up incredibly expensive lawyers on your defence side and you are much more likely not to be convicted than you are if you're relying on legal aid or if you have, the local high street solicitor punching way above their weight. It's obvious. The richer you are, the wealthier you are, the more powerful you are, the less you seem to think that normal rules, both moral and legal, should apply to you. Even like motoring offences, if you've got the money to hire a... I don't know how much of it you've seen. I don't know how much of it you've followed. I don't know how much of it you can bear. It is inexplicably hideous, all of it. The photographs, the allegations, the police reports that were not followed up, the incredible absence of concern for these young women, which again has parallels with the scandals that we've had in this country, because there's a sort of subtext of consent, isn't there? There's a subtext of, well, they didn't mind, they went along with it, which is what the police often said in the cases of the grooming gang scandals that we've seen in this country. So, and Fergie, as she still calls herself, Sarah Ferguson. Emails appear to show Epstein wanted her to release a statement saying he was not a pedo. Again in March of 2011. It's not a shock to me that rich and powerful people have a vocabulary of their own. And it's not rich and powerful, is it? It's rich or powerful. Because Andrew Mountbatten Windsor doesn't bring wealth to the table. He brings influence and status. Epstein deals in both. He deals in money, he deals in humans, he deals in influence, and he deals in wealth and status. He's like a kind of, like a sort of Tolkien-style spider at the centre of a web that extends into almost every corner of Western society. Or at least into the almost every corner of the upper echelons of our shared societies. And I don't know what to do today, except ask you what you have been most taken by, shocked by, disgusted by. What have you... Well, hey, here's the question. It takes me a while to get there sometimes. What have you learned? 0345 60 60973. Whether you're looking at Mandelson, whether you're looking at Andrew Windsor, whether you're looking at Virginia Giuffre, bless her memory, whether you're looking at the allegations being made about Donald Trump, which he subsequently claimed somehow absolve him, that appeared and then disappeared in moments, had to triple check I hadn't been dreaming, the knowledge that the Department of Justice has said essentially that they're not going to release what's left, which is about the same amount as what has been released. Why not? Why can't we see everything? That's the second question. And I'll take serious, I don't want conspiracy theories, but why can't we see everything? If they can redact people as they have done, who are vulnerable or who are victims, why can't we see everything? Why can't we see every single mention of Donald Trump, for example, in the Epstein files? How can somebody who appears in them hundreds and hundreds of times essentially be overseeing the process of what gets released and what doesn't? I am not, as you know, a conspiracy theorist. But it does seem an extraordinary coincidence that so many members of his high command were supremely comfortable in Epstein's company. So question number one, what have you learned? 0345 60 60 973. Question number two, what is the sort of biggest lesson in a way? It's the same question as what have you learned, but the idea that this goes on. That's the bit I'll never understand, is that if Jeffrey Epstein said to me, Oh, we're having a big party. You should come to my island. There'll be some teenage girls there who will do whatever you want. I would run in the opposite direction at 10 million miles an hour. And I would have done when I was 25, let alone 54. The confidence, is it? The knowledge that these men are going to behave in exactly the same way that he does? You might not have learned anything, of course. If you're a woman, you're more likely, less likely to be shocked by any of this than most men are. But what have you learned? Hit the numbers now, 0345 6060973. And I think the question I'm going to ask is whether or not the scale of it, the sheer scale of this, means that justice is slipping out of reach for everybody. There's just so much of it that how on earth do you pursue or prosecute? Do you understand what I mean? That might be a bit niche. So we'll begin with what have you learned from this hideous saga? 0345 6060973. It's 20 past 10.
LBC.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean... I just wanted you to see my new Wickes kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wickes, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, right now, find big savings in the Wickes kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wickes. Terms apply.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 22 minutes after 10, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Where, does anyone respond to this stuff with a sort of, yep, I knew it, I knew this was going on? The idea that the extent of Epstein's network, the tentacles that reach into so many areas of the highest levels of American and British society, the royal family, the de facto deputy prime minister, there's something here that I cannot make sense of, and I don't know what it is. Do you? What is it that is so baffling about this story? It's not the right word, is it? It's like this impenetrability, this sense of shock that you have at something that is not just going on under your own nose, but is going on above your head, is going on, as I keep saying, in the highest echelons of our society. It doesn't matter what your previous opinions were about any of these people. You didn't have them pegged as characters who would be comfortable with or go along with this kind of thing. Epstein's first conviction was in 2008 in Florida, where he pleaded guilty to procuring a child for prostitution and soliciting a prostitute. Only did 13 months in a county jail. He started a sort of PR rehabilitation process almost before he'd got out of the door. But that is the point for me at which everything begins to fail to make sense. I'm going to stay friends with him. I'm going to go on holiday with him again. I'm going to keep in contact with him. He's sending money to some people, but some of these people are so rich, they will never, ever need money from him. They literally make him look poor. Elon Musk sending him messages. Hi, Jeff. I was thinking of flying down for an epic vacation. Redacted name. Told me you were planning a party. Girls. I cleared my calendar. What are the details? Thank you, good sir. That's from Elon Musk. He replies, I mean, it's all there. And that's the bit I don't, and maybe nobody does. Maybe I'm just going to sit here for an hour spluttering incomprehensibly about what is going on. Because who can tell me how this works? How do you sound somebody out for this kind of behaviour? It's just a question I asked when it was taxi drivers in Rotherham. How do you know that your mate is going to be, forgive my French, up for it? When I thought all decent people would, A, run a mile and B, call the police. How do you sound someone out? Do you make jokes about grabbing women by their genitals and then see how people respond? And if they respond in a certain way, I don't know, if they say, oh, it's locker room talk, then you think, aye, there's somebody I might be able to do disgusting business with. How do you even begin to establish who may or may not be sufficiently repulsed by what you're doing? And then at the other extreme, people who won't be able to wait to come to one of your parties. I cleared my calendar. And of course, this is happening after he'd been jailed for procuring a child for prostitution. November 2012, Elon Musk, who of course spoke to a crowd in London that was supposedly dedicated to protecting women and children from predators. In 2012, Elon Musk wrote to a man who'd been jailed for procuring a child for prostitution to ask, what day night will be the wildest party on your island? I don't know. I don't even know what question to ask you today. What's going on? What have you learned? Gareth is in Birmingham. Gareth, you can have a go answering a question I've barely asked.
Morning, James. Hello, how you doing?
I'm all right, but I'm uncomfortable and confused. But, yeah, I mean, beyond disgusted, obviously, horrified, all of that. But these, you know, Musk essentially put his own man in the White House last year. And yet, after Jeffrey Epstein was jailed, he's asking about parties. And anyway, what have you learned? What have you learned?
I suppose I've learned a couple of things. One is that power, if that's your need and for acquisition is power, it becomes very boring. In the same way that you can get into a particular job and after a while the job is boring and you want more. I think for powerful people like Elon Musk, for Trump, they attain the power they want and then it's a steady. They've got it. It's boring. There's nothing to acquire anymore. So you go a level further. And for Trump, you know, he started that in his first presidency, but he had people around him to kind of keep him on the guardrails. But then he got rid of them. And in the second term, now I can do whatever I want with impunity. And I think similarly, your worry about, you know, how do people find out that somebody will be up for coming to the island. People fish. Corrupt people fish. And by that, what I mean is conversationally, they'll bring up something that's a bit inappropriate. Do you react? Do you say anything? Do you say you're abhorred by what they're saying?
Yeah.
If you don't say anything, they'll say something a bit darker. Do you react? If you don't, that you're telling them that you're okay with what they're talking about. That's how they start to fish. Because I would say it's the same with recreational drug use. Even if it's just smoking, you know, marijuana, someone will fish and maybe ask to find you're similarly minded, you know?
And yeah, okay. Like sounding out, a sort of...
Yeah.
Just waiting to see what reaction you get. Racism, maybe, as well? You'd sort of say something a bit low level, waiting to see...
Yeah.
Misogyny, racism, all the usual things.
Racist joke, anti-Semitic joke. Does everyone laugh? Does anyone feel a bit uncomfortable? No one feels uncomfortable. How much further can I take this? What can I say next? Can I shock them, or are they part of my gang?
I like this analysis. I mean, like is an odd word to use, but you know what I mean. About this thing I can't get past? The 2008 conviction, and this, you know, it's after that conviction that people like Mandelson and Andrew Windsor and almost all the rest of them are still consulting. How did that? Here's a question. I don't know if anyone can answer this, but you can go first. How did that conviction not shut him down forever?
I think because power and money. That could outweigh everything. That was enough to get him off, you know, get the sentence turned into a more lenient sentence, make arrangements with Howard Lutnick, get deals here and there. There are other people who want favours who you might be helpful to in the future. I think that's what it's all about.
And the stuff that we... And you know, the stuff that was not... that hasn't been released, you can't really blame anybody for speculating. Almost unimaginable things must be in there, because what they've released is incredible. The stuff they've decided not to release, so you mentioned Howard Lutnick planning a visit to the island years after he claimed to have cut ties with the convicted paedophile. He's the Commerce Department Secretary. He's the sycophant in chief at Trump's cabinet meetings. He's the guy who sits there saying, on a scale of 1 to 10, Mr. President, would you agree that you deserve a 12 for your good looks and intelligence? And he's there. He's up to his elbows. He's up to his ears. In Epstein associations, years after he claimed to have cut, I don't know. Do we sound naive? Do I sound naive? Are you sitting there thinking, oh, bless him, but does he not realise this is why he keeps thinking about Henry VIII? Because men have been behaving in this way throughout the ages. And to think that guardrails or laws or authorities or conscience or morals will ever put any sort of brake on these people is just naive and idealistic. I don't know. It's 10:30. Thank you, Gareth. The phone lines are open. 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. I'm not on particularly perspicacious form this morning because I don't know how you talk about this. You can pick the ones you don't like. Like, I'm an anti-royalist, so I'll go in on Andrew. I'm anti-Labour, so I'll go in on Mandelson. I'm anti-Trump, so I'll go in on Trump. But that really detracts from the universality of his associates, that all they have in common is wealth, status and perversion, it would seem to me. And I don't understand how that can go so unremarked at such a high level. Hopefully you can explain it to me after the headlines with Dominic Ellis.
A government minister has told LBC that Lord Mandelson still has questions to answer over his links to Jeffrey Epstein. The former ambassador to the US resigned from the Labour Party last night. Palestinians have started to enter the Rafah border crossing between Gaza and Egypt this morning. The limited reopening is a key part of the Israel-Hamas ceasefire. And petrol stations across the UK will now be required to report the price they charge for fuel to the government. The Fuel Finder initiative aims to help drivers save money on petrol and diesel. LBC weather cloudy for most, with spells of rain in the north and in the east. Brighter spells in the far west of Scotland later, a high of 9 degrees.
This is LBC.
There's so much more to enjoy when you fly in Emirates Economy. Spacious legroom, delicious regionally inspired meals, complimentary drinks, and with the latest movies, TV shows, music and live sport, some of the best entertainment in the skies. And our family services make your journey simple and fun. Plan your next trip and start the holiday early in Emirates Economy. Fly Emirates, fly better.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Sainsbury's to Lidl and saving £33 on this week's big shop at lidl.co.uk/save. Which means a stocked up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands and your fresh five a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value.
Process check 26th of the first 26. Sainsbury's also sell other products. See online for more details.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
The Volkswagen Fantabulous, Fandabby-dozy, Fandanger-ding-dong fortnight is here.
Stop. We've been through this, Harry. It's the Volkswagen Fantastic Fortnight. Much snappier.
Oh, okay. From the 2nd to the 16th of February, the Volkswagen Fantastic Fortnight gives you an extra £1,000 towards your finance deposit on top of existing offers on the Polo, Golf, Tiguan and our all-electric ID 3, 4 and 5 with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative. Visit your nearest Volkswagen retailer now. Hurry, offer ends 16th of February. Better?
Perfect.
Indemnities may be required. Volkswagen Financial Services.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
10:34 is the time. We are, if you're just joining us, talking about the Epstein files. It's not a programme that lends itself to easy analysis, because there's not really a central question running through our ponderings. I'm asking what you've learned, but that feels inadequate. And the reason it feels inadequate is because I don't have the vocabulary to address what we are discussing and what we are discovering. I genuinely don't know how to do this. It's too big. Almost every time we talk about Donald Trump, we talk about the impossibility of holding on to anything, because the minute you get a grip on something that matters, something else happens. He'll invade Iran in order to distract people's attention from the Epstein files, or he'll kidnap the president of a foreign sovereign country in order to distract attention from problems at home, or border force officers murdering people on the streets of Minneapolis in cold blood. And I feel a bit like that as I look at the latest tranche of files, which Donald Trump has inevitably claimed absolve him of wrongdoing, even as the rest of us process the fact that some absolutely hideous allegations were contained in the first round of releases this weekend that then were mysteriously redacted, mysteriously removed, almost as if there were people involved in the process who were not very impressed by what they were required to do. So they did something they weren't supposed to do, and then as soon as it was noticed, it got undone. Listen to this. This is an interview with Epstein that nobody seems to know the provenance of or understand the reason for, but it's really interesting.
Just ask a question. Is your money dirty money?
No, it's not. So, in fact...
Why is it not dirty money?
Because I earned it.
But you earned it... We went back to this before. You earned it advising the worst people in the world, right, that do enormous bad things, and just to make more money. You're a mathematician. We walked into that clinic where they're giving that money out to these people that are in the most dire straits of poverty and sickness, and told them that the money was coming from class 3 sexual predator?
Tier one.
What's tier? Tier one's the highest and worst.
No, I'm
the lowest.
I'm the lowest.
You're the lowest. Okay, tier one. You're the lowest. But a criminal.
Yes.
That the money came from them. What percentage of people do you estimate? I understand you don't like probabilities. Do you estimate would say, I don't care. I want the money for my children.
I would say everyone said, I want the money for my children.
Did they know where the money came from?
I told them the devil himself said, I'm going to exchange some dollars for your child's life.
Do you think you're the devil himself?
No, but I do have a good mirror.
It's a serious question. Do you think you're the devil himself?
I don't know. Why would you say that?
Because you have all the attributes. You're incredibly smart. You remember, the devil is somebody who knows
what?
The devil's brilliant. You read Milton's Paradise Lost.
The devil scares me.
Weird. Nobody knows why it was done. Nobody knows where it comes from. You keep waiting for someone to say, oh, it's a 60 Minutes from 2009, or 2010, just after he got out of jail. Is it posthumous? Has he recorded it for posterity? Is it some sort of weird... I genuinely don't know. But there it is. There's a sort of knowledge of what he is and what he does. And I can't get past the conviction in 2008 for procuring a child for prostitution, a deal. So normally when deals are done, that there are worse accusations that go by the by, and everybody carried on being friends with him. That's the bit. Can you explain that to me? I'm conscious that we haven't heard a female voice yet. That's often the way on radio phone-in programmes. Happily, not so much this one, but I really want to hear a woman's answer to the, or female answers to the question of What have you learned from this? What are you taking away from the knowledge that many of the most powerful men in the world were supremely comfortable in the company of a paedophile, were supremely comfortable in the company of a man who had pleaded guilty for procuring a child for prostitution? And an awful lot of these people, the sort of worst of them, have been at great pains recently to portray the United Kingdom as some sort of paradise for perverts and paedophiles. What is it? I mean, is it as simple as saying that if you don't want to get into trouble in elements of British society and the British media for being a paedophile, just make sure you're rich and white and not brown? I mean, is that it? Where's little Tommy Ten Names at the moment? What's he got to say about Elon Musk wanting to go partying with a bloke who had been convicted, who had pleaded guilty to procuring a child for prostitution? Can't get past these things. 03456060973 is the number that you need. Peter Mandelson. Bill Gates is in there. All of the names. So many members of Trump's administration. And yet, just a sense that it doesn't matter enough, and I don't understand why. Neil's in Nottingham. Neil, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I think in terms of my main comment, I'd separate it out from the, if you like, the web of, let's say, rich men and influential men, because I can, on one level, understand Epstein's desire, if you like, to cast his net as widely as possible and incorporate people into it. The thing it says to me, though, is it just underlines in treble, if not quadruple, just how low American democracy has now sunk to.
Why do you say that? Because of everything that's going on around these revelations.
Because it's almost,
because this stuff has been going on since, I mean, yes, as long as humanity's been around.
Which is why I said, from the point of view of somebody, if you like, wanting to cultivate a network of rich and powerful and influential people.
Is Steve Bannon is conducting that interview. I should have mentioned that, but nobody knows why is the point that I'm making. And Steve Bannon, of course, this is long after the conviction for soliciting a child for prostitution was being feted all over the place and propelling Donald Trump into the White House. It's too big, isn't it, Neil? It's too big to get a proper bead on or to get a handle on.
Yes, on one level it is, but it still comes back to my mind to this point that it just shows how absolutely low and how perverted American democracy now is. If you cast your mind back to 2016 in this country, when that original tape came to public about, you know, the grabbing and all the rest of it, everyone in this country, I think, at that stage took a sharp intake of breath and thought, that's it, it's over. But it wasn't, and it's continued in a similar vein. It's just got worse and worse and worse on every single level, that our whole frame of reference has shifted to the extent now that we can now have a situation where an American president implicated in this, never mind, if you like, which bits he may or may not have done and all the rest of it. The thought that an American president would still be in power in this situation is now normalised. I mean, in the UK, if you like, bad as we are and much as we can criticise elements, the fact of the matter is Prince Andrew is no longer Prince Andrew, and Peter Mandelson has had to resign yet again. Yeah. But that compared to America, if you like, is nothing. That's in the UK, Boris had to resign, well, for lots of reasons, but let's say COVID parties were
they're all very quiet, aren't they? The Donald Trump cheerleaders
they're
UK media.
Absolutely nothing. They're not even first tier.
Well, you say. Trump. I mean, we don't know that. And what if? I mean, God forbid, Andrew had actually been king. Would the same machines have operated? Would the same process of being gone through? You know, it's an accident of birth that made him second in line to the throne for his entire child, well, until Prince William was born. But do you know what I mean? He is disposable. Whereas, had he been one notch higher up the ladder, he wouldn't have been. And what am I talking about? The engines of the establishment might have moved to protect him they moved to protect people in the United States.
I still remain convinced at the moment, though, that our rule of law does at least still stand for something. In America, it stands for nothing. The only reason these files have been released in the first place is because there was an act of law passed in America. Then the act wasn't met. It's still not being met. And Trump is in the position probably where he can and will say to Pam Bondi, supposedly his independent attorney general, I don't want any more released than anything that is released. I want it to be taken down within 24 hours and redacted in the following way.
Right, which is it is unbelievable. I mean, I can understand why British newspapers are going after Mandelson and Andrew Windsor, but the I read one newspaper that essentially just repeated Donald Trump's claims that he'd been absolved of all wrongdoing without referencing the allegations that involved an awful lot of alleged wrongdoing. 50% of the Epstein files have still to be released, which means they're simply not complying with the law. Robert Garcia is a Democratic ranking member on the House Oversight Committee, and he said, Donald Trump and his Department of Justice have now made it clear that they intend to withhold roughly 50% of the Epstein files while claiming to have fully complied with the law. This is outrageous and incredibly concerning. The Oversight Committee subpoena directs Pam Bondi to release all the files to the committee while protecting survivors. And nobody is even pretending that they've done that. This is, I think, what you're speaking to when you say the decline, the measurable, the visible decline of what we would once have described as American democracy.
I guess the next question then is, well, so, if you like, so what? What's going to happen? He's in breach of the law. So what? Who's going to enforce it and how? The answer is nobody is, because he's going to ignore it, and his government departments, which hitherto are supposedly independent, operating on behalf of the country, are all going to toe the line and do whatever he says. That's where American democracy now is. He can choose to disobey any law that he wants to, and even the ones that finally probably end up in the Supreme Court. We can see that there's a large likelihood that they're going to go his way. He's corrupted American democracy to such an extent
completely,
that, this has become
that it can't handle
normalized.
This crisis. There's a paragraph in the article I was reading that does mention the thing I was just alluding to. This is in the Daily Telegraph. Some documents detailing graphic allegations against Mr. Trump. And if you haven't seen his allegations, I'd almost urge you not to look them up, because it's unbelievably hideous. They were released before being briefly removed from the DOJ website later on Friday. Thank you, Neil, rising to the challenge there of just trying to say something substantive about something that seems to me to be... How can something so enormous be so hard to pin down? I am not ordinarily either lost for words or struggling to find a strong opinion on something. I've had a message off a pal of mine. I won't tell you who it is, because he hasn't said whether or not this is for air or not, but you he's in this industry, you know him. Mate, I feel utterly confused and lost by the events of the last few days. The Trump excerpts that I've read made me sick to the pit of my stomach. Forget that I'm the father of a daughter. As a human being, it makes my blood not just run cold, but hit freezing point. Yet I feel like I'm living in a parallel universe where the British media has rightly gone in very hard on Andrew and Mandelson. Yet I see precious little coverage of the leader of the free world, who is up to his ears in appalling allegations that should make any man or woman with a shred of decency running through their veins beyond appalled, and yet so many appear unmoved. I spoke to a Trump-supporting friend yesterday about the files, and rather being appalled, his only response was, well, nothing has been proved yet. The world is beyond lost, and I fear for my daughter, because a lot of the world she is growing up in is being run by rich, powerful men who would see her as a piece of disposable meat, while their enablers would continue to look the other way. Do you know, I that's why I mentioned dinner last night, when we were talking about that woman who said in an interview if she could be a man for a day, she'd just go out on her own at night. That's why, perhaps, I'm getting more calls from men than I am from women, because women are just going, this is the world we live in. It's the world we've tried to tell you about. Well, the hashtag MeToo backlash, not all men. You managed to turn a rare moment of accountability for sexual harassment, sexual abuse, rape, turn that rare moment into a thing about men. All those people with the hashtag not all men. You remember that? Women just sitting there listening to this program going, yeah, James, this is the world that we've always lived in. Welcome. Welcome to your brief little window on what the reality is. I don't know. You tell me. 03 456 0973.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
It would have been an absolute farce to pay Waspy Women some £10.3 billion in compensation. No one lost any money. The changes were announced 30 plus years ago with advertising campaigns and coverage. There were more letters set out in 2011, and I'm sorry to say, it's up to individuals to check their own financial arrangements.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
So, close your eyes, picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wix to design our new kitchen.
At Wix, we have over 80 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000. And, right now, find big savings in the Wix kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms apply.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Sainsbury's to Lidl and saving £33 on this week's big shop at lidl.co.uk/save. Which means a stocked up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands and your fresh five a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value.
Prices check 26th of the first 26. Sainsbury's also sell other products. See online for more details.
With over 50 years experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Okay, done. Move that and... Oh, new ways to invest.
Okay.
Foolproof guaranteed returns. Invest today.
All right, I think I will.
Way before you seal the deal, check if it's real and if a company's authorised by the FCA.
Oh, thanks.
Search FCA Firm Checker.
There's so much more to enjoy when you fly in Emirates Economy. Spacious legroom, delicious regionally inspired meals, complimentary drinks, and with the latest movies, TV shows, music and live sport, some of the best entertainment in the skies. And our family services make your journey simple and fun. Plan your next trip and start the holiday early in Emirates Economy. Fly Emirates, fly better.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It is 10:51, and I think I may have finally happened upon the source of my feelings this morning, as we continue to work our way through the so-called Epstein files. There's part of me that wonders how anybody anywhere could be talking about anything else. I get that quite a lot, oddly, at the moment. I mean, it just seems to me, to the last caller's point about the collapse of US democracy and, of course, the ripples of that on this side of the Atlantic will and already are potentially absolutely enormous. But how can we be talking about anything else? It's a couple of weeks ago during the Greenland stuff. You know, we did 13 hours out of 15 on Trump and Greenland. 45 minutes on the Beckhams. And then Mystery Hour, of course, because everybody needs Mystery Hour. And then 48% of me was thinking, are we going mad? Or is everybody else? And 52% of me was thinking, but how can you possibly talk about anything else? Boris Johnson's column on Saturday, Boris Johnson, massive Donald Trump cheerleader, was about the bus driver who beat up a thief and lost his job and then had the decision to be fired up held by a tribunal. Boris Johnson, paid by the Daily Mail as a statesman, an international statesman, a former prime minister, massive Donald Trump fan, choosing to write about a sacked bus driver. Richard Littlejohn in the same newspaper on Friday, another massive Donald Trump fan, choosing to write about fly tipping. Aren't we? I'm not going mad. They are. We are in the midst of something absolutely hideous. The President of the United States of America claiming to be absolved while the rest of the world is literally reading allegations that are beyond disgusting about him. So many of his close associates, his wife, is in there, not just as a passing, but sending messages to Ghislaine Maxwell, currently serving a prison sentence for her role in trafficking underage girls. She calls Melania Trump sweet pea in a variety of exchanges. I remember flights. This is an email that Jeffrey Epstein sent in November of 2016. I remember flying back with Donald on his plane the first weekend I went to visit you in Florida. It was the weekend he met Melania, and he kept on coming out of the bedroom saying, "Wow, what a hot piece of," and a word I'm not going to say on the radio. And then the wife, Mrs. Trump, is sending emails to Ghislaine Maxwell. The director of the new film, the Amazon flop, provoking a lot of laughter and mockery at the moment, but they got paid so much money for it, I don't imagine they care about the laughter and mockery. The director of that film, who was essentially cancelled by Hollywood after a whole bunch of sexual misconduct allegations were made against him back in 2017, the director of that film appears in multiple pictures with Jeffrey Epstein in the latest release of files. Are they looking after each other? 56-year-old director seen with his arms around one of the women, holding her arm on his leg, pictured with other women, hugging Jean-Luc Brunel, a French model scout and long-time associate of Epstein, who also died by apparent suicide in his jail cell while facing charges of raping a minor. Who are we going to get to direct the film, darling? Well, let's get that guy who got cancelled for sexual misconduct allegations and was frequently partying with Jeffrey Epstein. Oh, no, we can't go near him. Jeffrey Epstein is... But he isn't. That's the bit I don't get. So here's the question at 10:54. We may carry this on into the second hour, but only if your appetite for examining and discussing this matches mine. Why has the world not stopped? Why has the world not stopped? Why do these revelations not constitute a much, much bigger moment? Think about that, because maybe you can answer it. Because the people involved are just too powerful? Why did the world not stop when Henry VIII beheaded Anne Boleyn? Why has the world not stopped? How can it be that, you know, everybody who sits in the Oval Office buttering up Donald Trump with ludicrous sycophancy and the death of traditional journalism are also old mates of a convicted paedophile? And they stayed friends after... He was jailed for procuring a child for prostitution. I'm not going mad, am I? The world should have stopped. All of the things we consider to be true, whether we're discussing grooming gangs in the north of England, or whether we're discussing historic allegations, or whether we're discussing the Catholic Church or public schools, all of the things that we consider to be true should by rights have contributed to a process that sees this as the biggest story of our age. I mean, it would have been big enough if Donald Trump and his mates hadn't ended up in the White House. If Elon Musk hadn't ended up as the sort of right hand of the president and bought a social media platform in order to shut down honesty and critiques and truth to power and replace it instead with racism and white supremacy. Because you can't separate the two. I'm haunted by Mike in Greenwich's call a couple of weeks ago, Mike, a former US diplomat, just explaining it's all about the racism, the misogyny and the climate change denial. Everything that Trump stands for and represents is racism, misogyny and climate change denial. The misogyny may be too mild a word to describe what we're discussing today. But it's there, isn't it? You can only really engage in behaviour like this if you hate women. You hate them. Even as you profess to love them, you actually hate. You can't but treat women like this unless you hate them. So the misogyny's there. Why has the world not stopped? Laurie's in Finsbury Park. Laurie, what would you like to say?
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well. Well, I mean, you know, relatively speaking.
So what I was calling to say is I wanted to zoom in on something that you said a few minutes earlier. When you brought up Henry VIII,
yeah.
And you said that, you know, maybe is this, are women surprised by this? Is this in on some level what men are like? And that made my hair stand on, because that is a sentiment that I've heard again and again over years of researching this, talking to hundreds and hundreds of men about this. And that, I think, that suspicion, which is very, very natural, it runs sort of subcutaneous under all these assumptions, that idea that maybe this is just, there's something in men that does this. That is the point. The point is to create a sort of complicity, to make men of whatever social standing feel that they have more in common with the monsters who are doing this than they do with the victims. And actually, most men in the world have more in common with the victims of Epstein and Musk and Donald Trump than they
just for legal reasons. Trump is the focus of allegations, and Musk is not accused of anything other than wanting to party with Jeffrey Epstein on his island. So I understand what you're saying, but we do need to be careful.
Of course. But yeah, this, what I'm saying is the...
I understand what you're saying. Is that deliberate, then? Because I sit here, first of all, taking the mickey out of men who signed up for the not all men thing. And then as soon as you started down this conversation, down this point, I found myself thinking, but I know I'm not like that. But this is what you were addressing. It's why, for once, it's a good job I stayed quiet and let you make your point. Is it deliberate? I mean, is it part of the process of almost gaslighting populations to make men think that this is how men behave when it isn't?
I think complicity is an incredibly powerful political tool. And you saw that with Me Too. You saw that around Harvey Weinstein.
Yes.
You see that with this, I think. Complicity, the idea that you give people something in common, something to defend, and it's shame. It's complicity and it's shame. And what's but you also brought up the that awful quote just before the 2016 election, you know, you grab them by whatever you like. But actually the bit of that quote that people miss out now, the bit that shocked everyone, was when you're a star, they let you do it. And that's the... And I think the world at that point divided into people who thought there's no way he could possibly get elected now, and people who voted for him, not despite it, but because of it. Yeah. People who heard that and thought, well, that's the kind of guy we want. That's the kind of guy I'd like to have something in common with. That's what power is. You can do whatever you want, and you'll never be held accountable. I think that's what it's about.
Why do women vote for him?
There have always been women who have sided with patriarchy and voted for power and picked power above solidarity with other women. Sometimes, you know, that's the safe thing to do. Sometimes that's what seems sensible. And there are right-wing women right now. There have been women involved in every, you know, far-right movement in history. That doesn't mean that... It doesn't mean that it's not a tool of patriarchy. You see what I mean?
I do see what you mean. And briefly, because I'm going to be late for the news, and I don't think I'm going to apologise for this question, but it might be a little bit glib. Why has the world not stopped?
I think the world has not stopped because we're still deciding whether or not this is a moral event horizon. There is an idea out there that some men are simply too big to fail.
Yeah.
And I think culture is deciding, again, like whether or not a bank is too big to fail. Can we take the hit?
Wow. That's brilliant. Where can people read more of your work?
Oh, I'm on Substack at the moment. Sorry.
Okay, no, that's all right. Do you want to push people in that direction? Or not?
No, thank you. Sorry.
Okay. I'd like to. Will you stay on the line and tell Johnny so that I can read more of it as well? I don't know that any man has ever turned down the opportunity to have a free boost of their thoughts and works on this program. Make of that what you will, Laurie. And I hope you don't mind me pointing it out, but you're obviously brilliant. I mean, that was an insight of extraordinary power. Just that we're waiting to see whether or not it's an event horizon, and if it isn't, what do we do? We just it's why that point, unfair though it is on King Charles, of course, if Andrew had not been the spare, if he'd been the heir, would this have happened? Would the machinery of the establishment have permitted, the abdication of the Duke of Windsor notwithstanding, would it actually, we'll never know. It's 11:02.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play, LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, in the last hour, the serial killer Steve Wright has pleaded guilty to the murder of a 17-year-old girl. He kidnapped and killed Victoria Hall in Suffolk in 1999. She is his sixth murder victim. The 67-year-old will be sentenced on Friday. LBC's reporter Joseph Draper is following developments.
We had expected Wright to go on trial for the murder of 17-year-old Victoria Hall, who disappeared over 25 years ago. But in a dramatic U-turn, he pleaded guilty at the Old Bailey today, finally admitting to kidnapping and murdering the teenager in September 1999.
A government minister says Lord Mandelson still has questions to answer over his links to Jeffrey Epstein. The former ambassador to the US resigned from the Labour Party last night. He also says he has no recollection of receiving £55,000 in payments from Epstein in the early 2000s. Minister for Early Education Olivia Bailey was asked about the latest revelations on LBC earlier today.
I think I would like Peter Mandelson to answer questions about the documents that have been revealed over the weekend about the depth and extent of his relationship. I would most importantly like Peter Mandelson to come forward with any information at all that he has that could help secure justice for the victims of Jeffrey Epstein's horrendous crimes.
Yes.
Palestinians have started to enter the Rafah border crossing between Gaza and Egypt. The limited reopening is a key part of the Israel-Hamas ceasefire. 20,000 people are said to be waiting to leave for medical treatment. Petrol stations across the UK will now be required to report the price they charge for fuel to the government. The Fuel Finder initiative aims to help drivers save money on petrol and diesel. And figures from Nationwide show the average house price rose by 0.3% in January to more than £270,000. The Building Society says the number of approved mortgages remained close to pre-pandemic levels last year. That's despite sales dipping at the end of 2025. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 14 at 10,238. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with spells of rain in the north and in the east. Some brighter spells for the far west of Scotland later, a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Club card accepted.
Feel the power to lower prices with Tesco Club Card. Get Tesco Finest Sirloin Steak, now £6.40, down from £8. Helping you share the love this Valentine's Day. Tesco, every little helps. Majority of larger stores steak, 227 grams, ends 15th February. Club Card or app required.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Six minutes after 11 is the time. If you were just tuning in, and of course you might be, and I said to you, the questions that I'm asking are, why has the world not stopped? And what is the one thing you can't get past? Would you know immediately what subject we were talking about, what subject we were addressing? I think you probably would. Why has the world not stopped? With the latest revelations from the Epstein files, which you have to presume are not as bad as the stuff that has not been released. You just have to presume that, right? If Donald Trump's administration is making the call on what gets released and what doesn't get released, then you can see that Andrew and Mandelson are being thrown under a bus. They deserve it all, of course, but you know that there's more in there. There must be, otherwise they'd release it. And what possible reason could there be for not releasing things? Victims being treated with contempt, survivors being treated with contempt. Once again, in a joint statement, Epstein's victims wrote, "Survivors are having their names and identifying information exposed, while the men who abused us remain hidden and protected. The Justice Department cannot claim it is finished releasing files until every legally required document is released and every abuser and enabler is fully exposed." And then this line here, this is in many ways, and listen, allegations are not evidence of truth, but they are things that need to be examined. Some documents detailing graphic allegations against Mr. Trump were released before being briefly removed from the DOJ website later on Friday. And he is claiming that this all absolves him. It is a story of unimaginable proportions. But you don't have to imagine them. What you also don't have to imagine is the reaction. And I don't know whether I'm calling it strange or inadequate or, as Laurie, our caller a moment ago, so brilliantly expressed, waiting to see. Has anyone got a sense of bystander effect? Who would lead this? The Democratic Party in the United States of America is, I mean, pretty much denuded. The media, of course, has been filleted since Donald Trump became President of the United States of America. Even Twitter, which you might naively imagine could lead some sort of grassroots revolution in the public discourse space, has been completely corrupted by Elon Musk, who was desperate to go to Jeffrey Epstein's island for some parties. Is this going to make me sound even stupider than usual? When Elon Musk writes to Jeffrey Epstein, "I was thinking of flying down for an epic vacation. Redacted name told me you were planning a party." Why is that name redacted? Well, who does that embarrass? Who does that protect? Someone told Elon Musk that Jeffrey Epstein was having an amazing party and he should get himself down there. And then in brackets, Musk writes, "Girls, FTW." Am I going to sound really stupid if I say, what does FTW stand for? Do you know? Is it for the win, is it? I knew my younger colleagues might come galloping to my aid on this. Okay, "Girls for the win." Elon Musk writing that 4 years after Jeffrey Epstein was jailed for procuring a child for prostitution. I mean, who on earth writes to a man who's been jailed for procuring a child for prostitution to ask if I can come to a party, "Girls for the win"? If indeed that is what FTW stands for, and I can't think of anything else. "I cleared my calendar," he writes to the man who had previously been jailed for procuring a child for prostitution. "What are the details? Thank you, good sir." Anyway, here he is, Tommy Ten Names' rally, explaining why this country has a real problem with paedophiles and abuse of young women and girls. Hello? You see what I mean, right? Every thread I tug, whole suits fall to pieces. And it's not even the top story or the leading story in some American newspapers. The most prominent or the most prestigious of which is owned by, wait for it, the bloke who owns Amazon, who have just made the film about Melania Trump that was directed by a bloke photographed in these files with young women about his person and Jeffrey Epstein sitting next to him. Laurie's right, isn't she? The world probably doesn't know how to cope with this. We are waiting to see whether or not we've reached an event horizon. A morality event horizon, a point at which a decision is taken to flush out the Augean stables of everything Jeffrey Epstein represents, up to and including the current President of the United States of America. It's not going to happen, is it? It's not going to happen. So, why has the world not stopped? And what's the bit of it you can't get past? I can't get past that conviction. I can't get past the fact that it doesn't appear to have held him back in any way, shape or form. Sarah Ferguson's still writing to him. People still taking money from him. After the first conviction, where he pleaded guilty to procuring a child for prostitution and soliciting a prostitute. The plea deal at the time was controversial, but they were still queuing up to pay homage at his court. Natalie's in Taunton. Natalie, sorry, I went off on one there. What would you like to say?
Hello.
Hello.
Couple of things. First of all, I've been listening since this whole thing started at 10, and you've been talking about you've got daughters, and you've talked to other men who've got daughters. I'd like to point out that you're also a brother, you're also a son.
Yeah, I didn't go.
Also a
I mean,
nephew.
No, I do know that. I was just relaying a conversation literally that
yeah,
we had last
know,
night
but
about.
I think it's a very
I have
common
wives.
Thing.
Yes, of course,
yeah,
but I haven't done that today.
It's a very common thing. No, but I'm just saying we're all, you know.
Of course.
Anyway, that to one side. I think one of the reasons why you haven't, what I said originally to the producer, was the reason you haven't had many women calling is that none of us are surprised, and it's not news. It's just something that's happening and happened. And I think it also ties in a little bit with the adolescence programme.
Go on, tell me more. Well,
I think because I spoke to you about that, and it's about finding your tribe, and it's so easy to find your tribe. And online or within the corridors of power. And people don't realise it. I think maybe back then didn't realise that their internet history would be so easily to access, and they probably thought they were going to get away with it. And technology has moved on now, so people can be traced wherever they are, and they're getting cleverer and cleverer to hide their tracks. But there's also somebody else more clever who can find them. And I think within that little pocket, they find their own little gang, and they just encourage each other.
I mean, possibly there are two things here, but possibly it will be male privilege speaking when I wonder about this. So I can understand you not being surprised by what men do. Okay. But are you not shocked by the reaction or the absence of reaction?
Well, I'll give you a little of an anecdote. My daughter is currently visiting London. She went out with her couple of lady friends yesterday, and she got kicked in the street by a complete stranger. And so why, you know, it's not a, obviously.
No, I'm talking about the sort of engines of society. I'm not surprised by what men do, but surprised by the fact that much smaller offences by different people, including men, would have received very, very different, much more severe and serious treatment than this is receiving. That's the bit I can't quite compute, is the way the story feels.
Yet. Yeah. I mean, I think because, interestingly enough, I was listening to the Rest is Politics podcast this morning, talking to a chap who used to work in Russia. I can't remember his name. And it's about the power of having that position, the power of having that status and of that having that income. People are so intimidated by it and also in awe of it. And because of the society we live in, respect it. And a kind of condoned behaviour.
He's got a private plane, he's got a private island.
Yeah,
I mean,
so
this is everything.
Okay.
Yeah, this is everything we aspire to. These are all
exactly.
the trappings of success in our society. And therefore, but then you've got this 2008 conviction. That's the thing. Maybe I'm missing something. Maybe there's something I don't know. But after that, why are people still emailing him? Why is Elon Musk still asking if he can come to his party with, quotes, girls for the win? I mean, what would you do if someone you knew, and Natalie, talking about wives and daughters and sisters and nieces. What about your brothers and your sons and your husbands and your boyfriends and your partners? What would you do if one of them wrote to a guy who'd been jailed for soliciting a child for prostitution and said, oh, can I come to your next party, girls for the win? There you go. I found something that we can, if you like, dig into. What would you do? What would you do if your son or your husband was contacting an acquaintance who had been jailed for procuring a child for prostitution, asking if he could come to your party, brackets, girls for the win, close brackets. What would you do? How would you feel? And they were all doing it. It's 11:15.
This is LBC.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean. I just wanted you to see my new Wix kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wix, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, right now, find big savings in the Wix kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms apply.
Tuesday night on the sofa, watching telly with Mum. Again.
May Walkers stay with the mothers for life.
This is the moment Stephen chose to speak to Barclays about Mortgage Boost, so he could borrow more with help from family or friends. We're helping first-time buyers get on the property ladder sooner. Search Barclays Mortgages. Barclays. Make money work for you.
Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Subject to application, financial circumstances and borrowing history. T's and C's apply.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doom-scrolling for telling stories. Too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save 1/3 with off-peak group tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad! Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use,
interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
11:17 is the time. This is, well, very thought-provoking, very clever, I think, from Alan. In a sexually dimorphic species, extreme male power plus secrecy and weak constraint reliably generates sexual exploitation unless actively countered. That explains why allegations of impunity are not intrinsically surprising. I flatter myself this may be importantly relevant. Flatter yourself away, Alan, who sent me that message via Blue Sky. It's so Trumpish for me, this conversation, because if it had landed if it had gone off like a bomb in the middle of our lives, in full, and we've still only seen half of it, would the reaction have been different? Would the world have stopped? Would you be looking at evidence that the most wealthy, powerful, high-status men on the planet were, so many of them, were part of a paedophile's web? And you think about the Catholic Church, you think about schools, you think about various organisations over the years. I met Alexis J the other night, Baroness Alexis J, and her child sexual abuse inquiry, the majority of which is recommendations are yet to be enacted, although I gather the current government is behaving rather more responsibly than the last one. You think of the people queuing up to express horror and outrage at hideous crimes committed by brown men who've said absolutely nothing about these hideous crimes, in some cases actually and in some cases allegedly committed by very rich white men, very powerful white men. And you know that racism and misogyny go hand in hand because we never tire of pointing it out. But you can have all of the intellectual weaponry available and still not feel adequate to the task, as a man, feel adequate to the task of working out what's going on here. And that's the question I can't get past. Why has the world not stopped? It's not how men behave that shocks, although it is going to shock women considerably less than it shocks men, some men. It's the absence of reaction. It's the looking the other way. It's the, oh, well, let's write a column about a bus driver who got sacked for beating up a thief, or let's write a column about, I don't know, fly tipping, which the two best paid columnists on the Daily Mail both did at the end of last week. I suppose, in their defence, that this stuff emerged subsequently. But the idea that you wouldn't be writing about Donald Trump at this point in the historical cycle is absolutely extraordinary. Absolutely extraordinary. Do you know what else is interesting? And I don't think you can separate the two. It was the Brexit anniversary this weekend. Did you see any celebrations anywhere? I'm pretty sure that when it actually happened on January the 31st of, was it 2020? I'm pretty sure that everyone was telling me it was going to be a big celebration. It was going to be an annual party. The Daily Express would be handing out bunting. Everybody would be going along for a massive part. It's going to be Liberation Day. Does someone remember? Did I dream that? Did I dream Liberation? It's Liberation Day. Nigel Farage probably doing the hokey cokey down the mall or whatever it would be. It was going to be a massive celebration. That was only 6 years ago. 6 years ago. It was going to be huge, going to be massive. Same people. Same people who were telling you Donald Trump was going to be incredible are now writing about fly tipping and sack bus drivers. And the same people that told you Brexit was going to be brilliant are marking the anniversary of Brexit Day, Liberation Day, by writing about, you guessed it, fly tipping and sack bus drivers. Why is it not there? Not there. 11:21 is the time. Ellie is in Kilburn. Ellie, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi, James. Firstly, I'd like to thank you for carrying this over the hour, because I think you've obviously heard a lot of the other women who've phoned in are really important and articulate things to say. But I think I know I tend to wait to hear what has been said by others before I decide what to contribute. So I think it's really important that you give extra space to this issue.
Good. I'm glad, yes. I'm not going to say thank you, because it only works if people like you pop up to contribute, but it seemed to make sense to me anyway.
The thing I wanted to address, really, was this idea that, okay, he was convicted in 2008, and then people continued to be his friends. So there is a very interesting documentary about Epstein, and it does highlight that this behaviour is alleged to have happened for decades prior to the 2008 police intervention. I mean, he was given extremely low-grade incarceration. He was allowed to go home every evening, during the day and go back in the evening or something like that. I mean, it was extremely low-grade. And he agreed to it on the condition that everything else that ever came his way in terms of accusation would be dismissed. So this was a way for him to minimise his behaviour, even though all of the people who knew him knew that this was his behaviour, and that he was targeting extremely vulnerable young girls who were poor, poorly educated, broken homes, already in trouble with the law, very much like the situation we have with the rape gangs in this country. Mm. And he also ran this kind of Ponzi scheme. He paid the young girls to come to his house to do massage, which started off genuinely as massage. And Ghislaine Maxwell's role in this was as a supporter, a comforter. There's a woman here in the same room. Nothing bad's going to happen. And this was the beginning of the process of the grooming that escalated and escalated and escalated. And the reason the people that are his friends now, were his friends until his death, continued his friendship was because this very shady deal that was struck between men, police officers, and Epstein and his lawyers,
prosecutors,
whatever. Because he could point to that and say, look how careful, how gently they've treated me. She was only a little bit underage. It was a misunderstanding. She's a bit of a crazy girl, but I've agreed to it because of this. And on top of that, the guys who knew him, knew his behaviour. Elon Musk, for example, seems to have known his behaviour, the parties and the girls and whatnot. They wanted to continue the behaviour themselves, and Epstein was their doorway into that world. So there's a double whammy here. It's not really serious. They're all a bit damaged girls anyway. We're giving them some money. And on top of that, the undercurrent of, we want this behaviour. This guy's legitimising our behaviour, procuring girls, allowing this behaviour to continue. And it's a little bit of a boys' club, frankly. You know, we all know who the others are. Dean was unbelievably... I have no idea why he kept such records, why he kept so much information, other than that he was perhaps blackmailing. I mean, he's dead now, so I can't slander him, but was he blackmailing people?
Well, he had leverage. He didn't need to blackmail people, did he? I mean, we may never know, but it is extraordinary that half of the files are still yet to be released. But the leverage is huge. Mm-hmm. He was obviously a frequent photographer. There's lots of pictorial evidence of people. We've got photographs of Andrew Windsor lying on top of a young woman. We don't know what age she is, but we do know that another young woman has come forward this weekend to allege that she was flown to this country for sex by Epstein. And it's funny, the more we talk about it, the less discombobulated I feel, but I'm still not close to any solidifying of a position, because I can't quite go to that place where we just say, yes, of course this happened. Because I'm like, well, of course it shouldn't, and that's pathetic, but that's where I am at the moment.
I mean, I understand that, James, and I salute you for it, and of course it's not all men, of course it's not all men, but unfortunately you scratch the surface of very nice, polite people, and you'll find some really dark.
You know, I'm looking at that sort of hat trick to explain everything, the racism, the misogyny, and then somewhat oddly, but the more you think about it, the more it makes sense, that the climate change denial. And when you look at the misogyny, you go back to those comments about grabbing women. Mm. And as I think it was Laurie that reminded us to saying, when you're a star, you can do anything you want. And and then I'm and that being a fork in the road. And then I'm thinking to the... there are good people on both sides comment, which signed with that was the racism being let out of the bag. there are good people on both sides when one side was Nazis and the other side was people being killed by Nazis. And Donald Trump came out and said there are good people on both sides. So those two things are almost like, I don't know what they are, but those are the codes that leave people with a choice between staying on board or getting off. And of course what they're trying to work out is how many people will stay on board. So the line about shooting someone on Fifth Avenue and not losing a single vote, that's almost a red herring. That's almost a distraction. The key moments were good people on both sides and grabbing women by the genitals.
I mean, it makes me think of the Brexit thing and how that's unleashed an absolute torrent of racist views that perhaps people would not have expressed had they not been encouraged and been given that space. And also, I'm a survivor of sex abuse. My father, who's now dead, so I can speak about him freely, was a man who absolutely was adored in his community. He was a pillar of the community. No one would have believed what went on behind closed doors to this day. And this is the sort of thing that people who are not experienced in this world do not understand. The vulnerability of a woman who lives with a history of sex abuse or violence or some other adverse childhood experience is very different from the lived experience of a woman who grows up in a family where she felt loved, supported, and in her own space and strong in her own being. And people like Epstein and the people who were his friends and continued to profit from his behavior are absolutely targeting, laser targeting on women who, like me, were harmed in fundamental ways in early life, so that their ideas of how to be safe and what's correct and are you loved and what is happening, how do I say no, all of these things get incredibly muddled and confused.
Wow.
And when you're talking about 14 and 15 year old girls, which is pretty much his target,
yes,
as far as I understood from this documentary, his target preference, you know, who knows their own mind at that age? And again, it was this money, power, beautiful house in Miami, Ghislaine Maxwell.
A private island, a private jet, the whole shebang. I mean, you know, your head would be turned by that. And
completely.
The more, I don't know what word to use, I don't want to use an unkind word, but the more, the bigger the hole inside you that needs filling.
Yeah.
The more susceptible you will be to the trinkets and the baubles and the pretense of concern or the pretense of love, or the pretense of interest.
Yeah, and this Ponzi scheme that he set up amongst these young women, where he would say, oh, well, if you don't want to do this anymore, you bring me two or three other girls and I'll pay you for bringing them in and they'll get paid as well, and so everyone's a winner.
Yes.
So he's building a pyramid of young, vulnerable girls, all of whom knew. They knew if they went to the police, they wouldn't be believed because they were coming from the wrong side of the tracks, or their parents were in trouble with the law anyway, or they had drug and alcohol problems. Again, exactly what happened in the north of England and the rape gangs all around the country, actually. But, you know, let's focus on the north. It's women know this stuff. Even if you haven't experienced, women live with this stuff because that's the extreme end. And the less extreme end is this poor woman whose daughter came to London and she was kicked in the street. Women are not valued. Women are seen as something other by an enormous number of men. And sometimes it's conscious and sometimes it's unconscious, in the same way as racial bias, and which is why it's one of the isms, right? Racism, sexism.
Yeah, and it's why that combination of the two is once you finally grasp it, is so hideously effective at explaining so much of what we would ordinarily be shocked or confused by, because it never ceases to be shocking, but it becomes less and less confusing. Ellie, I'm moving on only because I'm a couple of minutes late for the news already, but thank you so much. I mean, amazing calls. And it's not over yet. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
The serial killer Steve Wright has pleaded guilty to the murder of a 17-year-old girl. He kidnapped and killed Victoria Hall in Suffolk in 1999. She is his sixth murder victim. The SNP is calling for a full investigation into Lord Mandelson's role in Labour governments. He resigned as a member of the party last night following further revelations about his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. And people who use social media to promote illegal routes into the UK now face up to 5 years in prison. The Home Office wants to target adverts telling people how they can get around immigration checks. LBC weather cloudy for most, with spells of rain in the north and in the east. Some bright spells in the far west of Scotland later. A high of 9 degrees.
The LBC app. News your way. This is LBC.
You're really building that business, Josh. That's because you chose to bank with Virgin Money, earning cash back on your supplies, turning expenses into rewards on everything from Sanders to skip hire. He came, he soared, he conquered. Open Virgin Money's M account for business now. UK excludes NI, Channel Islands and Isle of Man. 18 plus. Terms and exclusions apply. Cashback rate of 0.25% backed by the current account switch service. Virgin Money is a trading name of Clydesdale Bank PLC.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to...
stay out all night! Yahoo!
That's brilliant. So, OK, sales targets. Are we hitting...
the dance floor!
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2 for 1, you can choose glasses for at least two use. From £70 with standard single-vision lenses.
Nice moves, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
There's so much more to enjoy when you fly in Emirates Economy. Spacious legroom, delicious regionally inspired meals, complimentary drinks, and with the latest movies, TV shows, music and live sport... some of the best entertainment in the skies. And our family services make your journey simple and fun. Plan your next trip and start the holiday early in Emirates Economy. Fly Emirates. Fly better.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It is 11:35. It might seem a little bit inappropriate, but we have a really interesting idiot's corner for you. It's from Matthew, although he uses different names sometimes when he contacts LBC, which is always interesting. He writes, "Oh my God, how has Epstein got anything to do with Brexit? And no checking by James, poor journalist," from Matt, who's in Welling. Well, Ellie was talking about racism in the context of how very powerful men get away with things, racism and misogyny being absolutely intrinsic to Donald Trump's success, and racism, of course, being a massive part of Brexit. But if you really don't know, mate, then Steve Bannon is all over the Epstein files. In fact, that little clip that we played earlier of Jeffrey Epstein being interviewed, the interviewer was Steve Bannon, who you will know Nigel Farage thanked for all his hard work and support on the Brexit project, although that footage mysteriously disappeared for a while as well. There's also a record in June 2016 of Epstein emailing somebody and describing Brexit as being just the beginning of a process of freedom. So, I mean, you ask the question thinking that you're being clever, whereas actually you just give me an opportunity to remind myself of all of the evidence that these things are actually intrinsically or at least... closely associated. But let's have a look at your history to find out why you've got this bee in your bonnet about racism and indeed Brexit. Let's see who we like. So here you go. This is "That Strange James You Can't Remember But Are Adamant That Nigel Farage Can Remember 40 Years." Oh, so you're a Brexit fan and a big Nigel Farage fan, and you signed yourself on that occasion, Matt. Marty B. "Mr. Trump is so right," writes Marty B, or Matthew, or whatever you're calling yourself this week. "Mr. Trump is so right on why Khan is being elected each time. Why will you not address the new Democratic of London? Well, partly because that doesn't make any sense. It is so sad for a news outlet to only go down the left-sided rabbit hole. And you're from Bexley this week, not Welling, although they're not a million miles away from each other. And I mention this partly because you're an idiot and you deserve to be humiliated on the radio, but also partly because it's interesting to see how fans of Donald Trump's racism, in this case his racist abuse of Sadiq Khan, will process the fact that him and his close associates are up to their ears in associations with a convicted paedophile. What kind of excuses will you make, or how on earth will you, what will you reach for in order to pretend that you haven't actually signed up to a project that is greenlighting all this kind of behaviour? Here's another one. Are you completely blinkered? London is dirty, full of crime, drug-peddling sweet shops. The demographics have changed so much in a short period. So you're buying the far-right propaganda about your own capital city on such an extraordinary scale that you're now reduced to defending the people who were partying with a convicted paedophile long after he'd actually served a sentence. Matt, or Marty, or Muppet, as I prefer to call you. 11:38 is the time. Rebecca is in Glasgow. Rebecca, what made you pick up the phone?
It started on Saturday, really. One of your colleagues had a call in about whether we should applaud the very rich for paying their taxes. And I kind of called out to the radio in saying, that's why Trump et al. Get away with what they do. And it's about reverence. Mm. And I think that, you know, we like to think that we're modern and we've come a long way in life, but we really haven't, because we're still living with centuries-old conditioning.
Why do you think I keep wanging on about Henry VIII?
This is, you know, even back to Henry VIII's yes. time, our betters can do whatever they like in life, and that's just the way it is. We had all these rich, powerful folk who raped, impregnated their slaves, their maids, and had their own children live in abject poverty. So why would it be a problem for them to do it to somebody else's children? Why should we revere the people who make money, whether it's old money, whether it's new money? Why should we revere them? Are we frightened of them leaving the country and putting people into unemployment? They're only in that position because people have put them in that position through their hard work. So yes, I believe we should take this hit. There are only a few people in America like Jamie Raskin who are actually shouting about this.
Yes.
They need the entire Democratic movement to be doing something about this.
I'm a big fan of Jamie Raskin.
Something might happen.
Yes, and of course, back to our friend with the multiple names and the racism, Nigel Farage in Brexit was very much in Jamie Raskin's sights when Farage went to Congress to give evidence and got handed his backside in a plastic bag by the politician you refer to. But why? Because I mean, there's two things going on here, and it may be that I'm indulging myself a bit by distinguishing between the two, and you see them as being inextricable and indistinguishable. But on the one hand, there's the conduct you describe, and I think that the behaviour of I'm thinking increasingly of the men who were sitting behind Donald Trump at his inauguration, these new earls, if you like, these new lords, the sort of equivalents mm-hmm. of the Wolseys and the Cromwells in Henry VIII's court, mm-hmm. who are possessed of epic wealth, but are powerful only insofar as they keep bending the knee to Donald Trump and, you know, commissioning films about his wife or all of these people, and some of the people that weren't there, of course, but who are very heavily involved in the project, the behaviours, but then the absence of response and the absence of reaction. I wonder where the line is between complicity and cowardice, why it is a Jamie Raskin and precious few else. Where are the US journalists working for big organisations? Rolling Stone is doing great work. But I thought this kind of thing would stop the whole world, and it doesn't, it hasn't. And I don't know whether that makes people who aren't shouting it from the rooftops complicit, or a bit cowardly, or just not concerned enough. So the three C's, complicity, cowardice and concern. How do we work out which is the biggest driver of behaviour?
I think it's concern. But the thing is, if you think about it, the church came in, finally came into the limelight, but it didn't stop the world. The church didn't lose any money out of bringing people down, but they had gone for centuries of hiding everything. So I think, you know, there are 8 billion of us on this planet. We can take the hit. And I think that we have to actually just not just highlight it. What's happened is they've thrown a couple of people under the bus, deservedly.
Yes, of course.
We've got Andrew Windsor being thrown under the bus, Mandelson, who can't remember receiving the money. If he'd not received that money, he'd have been out there saying, nope, never got that. Nope, never got that.
Who here hasn't mislaid 75 grand down the back of the sofa and forgotten it was there, or indeed where it came from?
But the other ones are being protected.
And half of the files have still not been released. So, you know, and of course what they do, these men, is they respond only to what is in the public eye. So Elon Musk insisting for years that he had absolutely nothing to do with Epstein. Now we've got him essentially, you know, looking forward to a party after the child prostitution conviction. After that conviction, you've got Musk writing to him wanting to go to a party with girls for the win, exclamation mark. I cleared my calendar. What are the details? And now he'll try and accommodate that, possibly knowing that there's a lot more that hasn't come out. So all we're going to do is legislate for what has come out while denying constantly that there is anything else, of which the mothership becomes Trump, who is accused in these documents of unbelievably hideous behaviour, claiming that he has been completely absolved. I mean, that is the apotheosis of Trumpism, fake news, allegations of hideous conduct, and the subject of the allegations claiming that he's been completely absolved. I don't know how you navigate these territories. I don't know how you make sense of these events that are happening in real time under our very noses and are being undertaken by the most powerful men on the planet. So you would hope that, you know, for those of us who've been covering the grooming gangs since 2011, when Andrew Norfolk of The Times first started drawing attention to it, and who have been clear throughout that sex abuse, rape, exploitation should not, your reaction to it should not be in any way determined or defined by the background or the ethnicity or the social status or the geographical origins of the perpetrator. You can't find rape more disgusting when a brown man does it than you do when a white man does it. You can't find rape more disgusting when a white man does it than a brown man does it. So happily, you know, many of us, happily is an odd word to use, but many of us have been clear about that from the get-go, even as it leads racists to accuse you of not caring about the stuff they care about much more. So what are they going to do today? Because they're part of the reason why these men are going to get away with this kind of behaviour. You know, you've got Elon Musk having the audacity to address a rally supposedly dedicated to protecting women and girls when he's writing fan mail to Jeffrey Epstein after Jeffrey Epstein has been convicted of procuring a child for prostitution. And this man, the richest man in the world, is writing fan mail to him, begging for an invitation to his parties and addressing him as my good sir. Thank you, good sir. And then he has the audacity to address Tommy Tenname's ridiculous rally pretending to protect women while he is begging to go to a party organised by a bloke who'd already done time for procuring a child for prostitution. So where will they be now? The men and the women, the people marching outside hotels, the ones who really, really care about women and girls. How are they going to express their unhappiness with the men who were, until, I don't know, midday Saturday, their actual heroes?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Lord Mandelson, one of the architects of course the new Labour movement, has resigned the Labour Party over connections with Jeffrey Epstein, Minister for Early Education and Equalities, Olivia Bailey. Does he need to be investigated by the Parliamentary Standards Committee?
That's not a judgment for me.
We must have a view.
I would most importantly like Peter Mandelson to come forward with any information at all that he has that could help secure justice.
But you don't have a view on the Parliamentary Standards Committee?
That's a question for Parliament to decide however...
You are a member of Parliament, just to remind my listeners.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
So, close your eyes, picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wix to design our new kitchen.
At Wix, we have over 80 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000. And, right now, find big savings in the Wix kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms apply.
People ask me, what's my good place? Wild swimming with the girls on a chilly spring morning. And knowing that with PensionBee, I can choose to invest in line with my values, which is why I picked their climate plan.
Last one in by blood!
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionbee.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
11:49 is the time. I'm just looking at the Elon Musk stuff that is here. And remember, he upset the king, didn't he, Elon Musk, albeit he appears to have tried to get back into Trump's favours. But Elon Musk posted something about dropping a bomb, huge bombshell. Donald Trump is in the Epstein files. Had he forgotten that he was begging to be invited to parties, one of which, according to Epstein himself, would be full of people who were, and I quote, no one over 25 and all very cute. He's now claiming that he didn't realise when he wrote... so-and-so told me you were planning a party, girls for the win. He didn't realise that girls would be involved. That's what Elon Musk is claiming. Do you think you can exaggerate the, what do you call it, the moral corruption of these people? But he thinks he can get away with it now. And part of the reason why they think they can get away with it is they keep buying all the things where you might actually be able to point out that they shouldn't get away with it. What would Twitter have looked like today if it wasn't owned by Elon Musk? It would have looked very different from how it actually looks. You literally start buying the things that could... I mean, the reason why you do it is to make sure that there's no criticism of the king. In this case, Donald Trump. But of course, when the machinery has been co-opted by the administration, by the regime, then you can protect yourself as well. So where would you go to find out the details on this? If they're now trying to shut down corners of the internet where free speech was... at least being practiced. And simultaneously, just as they lie about the dangers faced by women and children in this country from a certain type of man, or they massively exaggerate those dangers, while cozying up to a rich white man with identical perversions and appetites, and they pretend that London is the problem, or that we have issues, so they do the same with free speech. Claiming that free speech is under threat, when in fact, they're the ones that are shutting down free speech. They're the ones that are shutting down the ability to speak truth to power. Trump even threatening to sue a comedian for telling jokes about him at the Grammys. Catherine is in Manchester. Catherine, sorry to keep you. What would you like to say?
No, you're fine. Thank you for having me. First time calling, so I'm a bit nervous.
But it's only me.
Earlier, you were talking about, you know, how would you feel if someone that you knew well, yes, as writing to Epstein after what all he's done, right?
Yeah.
And I just wanted to point out that we're not talking about people like me, people like you. We're talking about the elite. So his first plea deal, right, was framed as a resolved issue. And yeah, then he served a minimal time. He kept his wealth, access, social standing. And for the elite, that signals that the system has decided he's still safe to associate with. And punishment often works like purification. So if you think about that and you think about the relationships that they have, they're all transactional. They're not moral. So he gets out. He's got all this information on everyone. And if you think about, okay, well, if someone has something on me, are you going to then go and be nice to that person and keep that relationship even at a distance, or are you going to go and slander them? So I feel like a lot of these emails that were sent, a lot of the messages after the fact, were more to save face with Epstein, so he didn't think they were talking to authorities.
Okay. And I mean, that's very much the Sarah Ferguson experience as well, in that she was saying things publicly and then sending him private messages saying she didn't really mean it, but she had to do that. And I quote, two quotes, protect her brand.
Yeah. And you had also asked, like, why the world didn't stop. And I think...
Well, why it isn't stopping today? Why it hasn't stopped this weekend?
Yeah. And, I mean, the truth of that is what you're running into, it isn't a moral failure at the individual level. It's a collision,
yeah,
on how modern power actually, you know, metabolizes harm. So we live in an era where exposure is constant, you know? So we're just,
yes,
all, like,
yes,
you said, trying to figure out which headline to follow.
And that's why it feels so Trumpy, regardless of his actual involvement in this story and his presence in the files. It's the equivalent of him just flooding the zone, which, again, Bannon, big friend of Epstein's, used that very phrase. You flood the zone with excrement, and then nobody can ever really operate normally. No one can ever really respond rationally to the moral corruption, because the zone is so flooded with excrement that by the time you've got a handle on that story, you're overwhelmed by that one over there. And that's what's happened here.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, the whole thing, it's just elite crisis management. So if you think about how that goes, first you isolate the villain, right? So you frame the harm as the work of one uniquely bad individual.
Epstein.
Because monsters don't have networks, right?
Yeah.
Then you moralize instead of explaining. So you use language like what we were talking about earlier, evil, the devil, they're sick. So it's not the norm. There's something else.
That was,
right?
Bannon doing that.
Yep. And that was his exact, like, this was,
yep,
his exact playbook, right? So then you shift the focus to identity, not impact, and you debate who the person is, how they see themselves, or how they're portrayed, instead of what they did and who enabled it. And then you normalize proximity to power. So you keep the accused visible, calm, conversational, and then you signal that continuity and access is not ruptured. And then you delay. So they delayed the release, right?
Yep.
You delay relentlessly, and you stall until attention fragments, memory is dull, and the public is exhausted. And then you let the fatigue replace justice. So we count on the audience moving on long before any consequence arrives. Because these things take ages, you know?
I'm from America,
but live in the UK.
Sure.
I kind of understand kind of what's going on there. And like you said, it's just a pure flood, and the Epstein files are no different.
I this is extraordinary. I presume you work in this field of crisis management or something, because you sound like a university professor giving me a quick pep talk before my exam on crisis management.
Definitely not a professor, but
no.
Yeah, mainly in cybersecurity, but also majored in behavioral science.
Right.
In a university. So don't practice in the UK, because UK culture is far different from US culture.
It's perfectly qualified to explain what's been going on in the United States. I mean, right down to the timetabling as well, which is not a coincidence, and the continuing absence of roughly half of the files that that full disclosure would demand that we could see, or that somebody could see. And it's a pessimistic analysis, yours, right, Catherine? I mean, mm-hmm. You're not offering much hope that there will be light at the end of this particular tunnel. There's just more tunnel.
I think that's basically the direction we're heading to in general with a lot of what Trump is doing. And trust me, I can't stand Trump. One of the main reasons I left America was to get out of there before he was reelected. But honestly, and it's going to sound terrible, I can't believe I'm saying it, I really don't think that he's done anything insanely wrong that's in the Epstein files. And I could be wrong.
Sure.
But I don't feel like he would have campaigned on that promise if he had.
This is an interesting point. He didn't really campaign on that promise. An awful lot of the people around him did, and he gave them just enough to think he was... Because I used that phrase, he campaigned on the promise, and I got picked up on it. And so I double-checked, I looked into it, and I looked at some of the references. About probably a dozen texters were saying he didn't actually campaign. That's a strong phrase. It's almost as if... That's certainly his supporters thought they were going to get it. But if you look at the history, it wasn't one of the things he routed. He didn't hit it anywhere near as hard or as often, for example, as he hit deporting foreigners or the racism. So it's there, but it was almost put there by others rather than something that he chose to dance on himself.
Yeah, and I highly doubt he wanted to release them, whether he was in them or not. And it'd also be very easy for his administration to admit anything that he was part of, right?
Well, he's claiming he's absolved by disclosures that include absolutely unbelievably unpleasant allegations. So, you know, we're back to the Fifth Avenue line again now, aren't we? Where he probably could release it all and claim that it was not true or it was fake news or they were alternative fact. I'm very glad you rang in last on this subject, because you have unpacked and unpicked an awful lot of what I have enjoyed talking about for 2 hours, but... You've really brought your A game to this conversation, Catherine, and I'm extremely grateful to you.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
No, I appreciate you. Thank you very much. And also a quick word on why sometimes, but not often, I point out that I need to hear from women, despite the fact that there's lots of men queuing up to talk to us. Sometimes, as Ellie, I think it was, who put it best, is I like to hear what other people have got to say before I stick my oar in. That's my phrase, not hers. And it's all good. I welcome all calls. All calls have been great. But I think the second hour, in many ways, elevated the conversation in ways that the first hour didn't. The first hour went to different places. But I'm very glad that we did that in the way that we did it. And if I hadn't been, then Catherine coming in at the end there would absolutely have vindicated every decision we've made. That's it on this subject. We move on next. I'm going to do something completely different. I goodness knows that we almost need a little bit of a mind wash after some of these conversations. Video game addiction is in the news. And I think I might have it.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, the serial killer Steve Wright has pleaded guilty to the murder of a 17-year-old girl. He kidnapped and killed Victoria Hall in Suffolk in 1999. She is his sixth murder victim. LBC's reporter Joseph Draper is following developments at the Old Bailey in London.
Took the whole court by surprise, I think, when he actually pleaded guilty at the Old Bailey, finally admitting to kidnapping and murdering the teenager from Trimley at St Mary in Suffolk. That was in September 1999. Of course, as you say, he's a prolific serial killer, already serving a whole life sentence for the murder of five other women. Crucially, though, this is the first time he's ever actually admitted to any of the killings.
LBC understands the suspended Labour MP Dan Norris has been arrested for a second time, accused of a series of sexual offences. Mr Norris, who represents North East Somerset and Hannam, had the whip removed last year. It followed his arrest on suspicion of historical sex offences. The SNP is calling for a full investigation into Lord Mandelson's role in Labour governments. He resigned as a member of the party following further revelations about his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. The PS says he has no recollection of receiving £55,000 from Epstein in the early 2000s. The Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, told LBC that Sir Starmer should have pushed him out of Labour rather than allowing him to resign first.
This all starts, of course, with the Prime Minister, who has yet again allowed himself to be embroiled in a mess because he appointed a man and looks like Number 10 waved through the thorough vetting procedures that would have stopped him from becoming our ambassador in the first place. That is a problem. Time and time again, Keir Starmer has shown that he's too weak to sack Mandelson.
P People who use social media to promote illegal routes into the UK now face up to 5 years in prison. The Home Office wants to target adverts telling people how they can get around immigration checks. And drivers can now compare fuel costs at petrol stations across the UK using a new Fuel Finder website. Forecourts are now required to report their prices within half an hour of making a change. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 were trading up 33 at 10,256. The pound buys $1.37 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy for most going into the afternoon with spells of rain in the north and east. Some brighter spells later in the far west of Scotland, a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 12 is the time, and you are, lest there be any confusion, listening to James O'Brien on LBC. You have to be a little bit careful with stories that look at percentages rather than figures. The Telegraph have undertaken a desperate attempt this morning to portray us as paying considerably more than every other country in the G7 in disability and sickness benefits. But the more you dig into the story, the more you realise that it's effectively propaganda. You're talking about shifting percentages, relatively small figures, but you know, if it gives right-wing client journalists an opportunity to attack the government, then it's mission accomplished, isn't it? So the numbers here are not huge. I want to make that clear. The number of kids referred for gaming addiction treatment on the NHS has increased by 500% in just 6 years. This is actually journalism 101. This is an interesting lesson in how tabloid media works. It's done what, James? It's gone up by 500% in just 6 years. So what is your thought now? If I said to you, the number of children being referred for gaming addiction treatment on the NHS has gone up by 500% in 6 years, take a rough guess. In fact, text it to me, 84850, or WhatsApp me on 0345 6060 973. It's gone up by 500%. What do you think the figure is now? No, honestly, don't play the game. Don't try and second guess or work out why I'm doing it in the way that I'm doing it. If I tell you something's gone up by 500%, give me the minimum ballpark figure that you think now would be the total number of children being referred for gaming addiction treatment on the NHS, because it's gone up by 500% in just 6 years. In fact, the Sun newspaper reports that a staggering blank, 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 blank children were sent to a dedicated unit for video game obsessed teens. A staggering number. A staggering number. So how many children do you think will be in treatment currently for video game addiction? So I read that and I thought probably 20, 30, 40,000 kids getting, I mean, because all the kids play games. Some of them are going to be addicted. How many people who like a drink are alcoholics? How many people who use recreational drugs or drug addicts? You've got a 500% increase. It's got to be up to, it's got to be 30 or 40,000. Yes, thank you to Jane who suggested five people. I see what I've done now. I shouldn't have made a big fuss about it, because now you're obviously recognising the fact that the number's going to be very, very low. Most of you are suggesting numbers that are even lower than the actual number. It was five, it's gone up to 30. So you've got the right idea. The staggering number is 121 children. And there's only one clinic. But that's not really, that's the springboard. That is the trampoline upon which we will bounce into the story. But it's not the basis of the story itself. Because with all conversations about addiction, I have the same question, and it's a brilliant question because it gets completely different answers. There'll be a theme that runs through some of them, but there won't be a kind of unanimity. I do it a little bit. I'd like these questions. I like questions. Do it a little bit oddly, well, with all areas of mental health, because there is a temptation, and I think we saw some evidence of that this morning, by the way, as immigration figures continue to come down, as I told you they were going to do, then people who depend upon hatred for their pay packets, they will be turning more and more attention to people with disabilities and people who are sick. And they won't bother distinguishing. They'll just talk about fraud and everyone's swinging the lead and everyone's taking the mickey and everyone claiming this, invisible conditions. That will now take up some of the space that has been previously occupied by racism and anti-immigrant hatred. Because they're not going to change the hatred. They're not going to change the business model. George Orwell, of course, called it the two-minute hate. They're just going to shift, because there are fewer and fewer people coming here from other countries. They're going to have to shift some of the hatred away from foreigners who aren't coming here anymore towards people who are already here, their own neighbours, possibly their family members, who have disabilities or mental health problems, and they will now be under attack. I say this very, very reluctantly, because I wish it wasn't true, and I don't want to add to the trauma and the difficulties that you already endure, but you're on the list. If you're in receipt of a disability benefit, if you have mental health problems, you heard it a little bit, you've got a little flavour of what's to come with the conversations about motability cars. I don't know how close you were to that topic, but the kind of people who dedicate their careers and their lives to demonising and denigrating otherness, the kind of people who would have been writing for the Sun newspaper 30 or 40 years ago about AIDS and gay people, then moved on to immigrants and foreign people, and because there's not going to be much of an immigration issue left by the end of this parliament, you just be very careful if you are disabled or if you are in receipt of a disability benefit, because they are going to come for you with exactly the same weapons that they went for people who are or look a bit foreign. And the question I always like to ask when I'm discussing mental health is the difference, the distinction. So much effort is put into poo-pooing or undermining the truth or the reality. You see it with neurodiversity as well. What's the difference between someone who's just a bit bad at reading and someone who's dyslexic? What's the difference between somebody who is clinically or medically depressed and somebody who is just a bit down? It's one of the most insidious things that has crept into public discourse in recent years, particularly in a phone-in context. And happily, we don't do it on this programme. That you will take a call from somebody who says that depression doesn't exist because I have been sad. It's a bit like taking a call from someone who would say that there's no such thing as a common cold because I've never had one. Therefore, everybody else must be lying. I've never had a cold. I've never been clinically depressed, but I have been a bit sad. Therefore, clinical depression is just a lie that's told by people who are actually just a bit sad, and they're exaggerating it for money, and they probably get a BMW from Keir Starmer personally. I mean, you've heard the calls. You've heard the kind of quotes, journalism end quotes, that I'm talking about. And depression is another one. There's no such thing. Or invisible conditions, which is a pejorative used by people who want to deny the existence of hideous, crippling conditions that reduce people to living lives that are entirely unenviable, but the tabloid model depends on making you envy them. Which, somewhat surprisingly perhaps, brings us to video games. Because I don't know what the difference is between playing too much, because you should be doing your homework, or working on your next book, or doing your chores, or digging a garden, or, I don't know, just doing nice, normal things, and actually being addicted. It's a fascinating thing, isn't it, addiction? We talk about it a lot, and it applies to so many areas of life, but who can actually, in the context of video games, who can actually describe the difference between playing a little bit too much, or even a lot too much, and having a condition that needs treating? And that's what I want you to tell me. I want you to describe the difference to me between playing games a bit too much, and because I know I'm not addicted. That was a very irresponsible hook and tease that I did just before the news. But something a bit weird happened this morning that hasn't happened to me since I was a teenager. Don't worry, it's perfectly clean. I found myself, as I prepared to come to work and talk to you, which ordinarily puts a huge spring in my step, I actually found myself wistfully imagining that I could spend the whole day today playing a game that I have got into in the last week. I went for years not playing video games. I used to play them all the time. I've told you this before. Very few people believe it, but it's true. You can check. I was the video games... If I told you I was the video games editor of a national newspaper and you didn't know which one it was, what would be the very last newspaper you imagined? I was the video games editor of a national newspaper. Yep, you're right. It's that one. I mean, it's extraordinary, really. It's extraordinary how far they've fallen since I left. That's what I think is the problem. So I was the video games editor of the Daily Mail newspaper. And that was one of the cushiest little numbers I have ever had in a life full of cushy numbers, both little and large. I would be sent almost every game relief. Well, in fact, if I wanted it and I hadn't been sent it, all I had to do was make a phone call or drop an email and I'd get it. I got sent consoles. I got sent games. I got sent what I have subsequently discovered is called merch. I got sent collectibles. I remember sticking one on eBay after it had been sent to me. It was like a limited edition Street Fighter joystick, and some lad got on the train from Northampton to come and buy it off me at the train. So I met him at the station after work. I mean, the extraordinary freebies. And I remember I have had a career of freebies. Since I became a showbiz journalist, I'd get sent every CD on, but the game stuff. And then... madly, it coincided with me becoming a parent. So a lifetime of playing video games. When I started on daytime television, I went from being showbiz editor of the Daily Express to being an hour a day pundit for more money on daytime television. And it meant that I finished at 11 a.m. Whereas in my previous job, which I was doing the week before, I hadn't finished at 11 p.m. My phone would ring at midnight almost every night. It would be the night editor saying, why on earth haven't you got this story that your rival has got? And it would be the same conversation every night. And I'd either have to try and pretend it wasn't true, or I'd have to just apologise and promise, all right, I'll write you 500 words for the second edition. So I went from being ludicrously overworked and quite well paid to being ludicrously underworked and even better paid. And it meant I was free at 11 o'clock. So I used to spend, I could comfortably put in 12 hours playing a video game. I mean, with breaks, I'd eat and go to the loo and stuff. I wasn't like one of those South Korean games players I read about a few years ago who wear nappies when they're in the internet cafe. True story, check it out. And then, unfortunately, when I should have really been in my pomp as a video games player, I became a father. And I couldn't justify it. I kept it up for about 6 months, maybe a bit longer, but you just could not justify getting paid for reviewing games if you couldn't put the hours in to play them. And thank God I didn't try. I'd much rather have spent time with my new baby than with Grand Theft Auto, but it was a very unfortunate juxtaposition of timing. If it had happened 10 years earlier, I may never have done anything else. If it had happened 10 years earlier, I could have become a video games person. That would have been like my career. But it didn't. It happened at roughly the time, a couple of years before I became a parent. So not long after becoming a parent, I knocked it on the head. And I have barely played a game since. Until about a year ago, when I came across a game called Indiana Jones and the Grand Circle, or Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. And I just really like the look of it. It must have popped up on my internet, on my feed, social media feed. And I love Indiana Jones, and I love those Tomb Raider-type games. They're the ones I used to love playing most. And I didn't have an Xbox, and it wasn't coming out. And I've got a PlayStation. It wasn't coming out on the PlayStation for about 9 months. But I was looking at my Samsung television. I told you this, didn't I, at the time? You may not even know this. I was looking at my Samsung television. Think that televisions have become a bit like computers. You know, you've got a computer, right? And all you use it for is a bit of internet surfing and emails. But it can actually, you could make a film on it or an album. It's got the software that is loaded into it, the software that is on board. You could probably run a space shuttle mission to Mars and back with your laptop, but you don't use any of the stuff that's on it. All you use it for is emails and internet surfing. I think my telly's like that. I was looking at my telly and some of the stuff on it. I thought, what's that then? Why is there an Xbox icon on my telly? I've got one of those frames, you know, the Samsung frame. So it's a box and a really thin screen, and you hide the box around the back of the piano or whatever, and no one can see that. So it's like a magic telly. And I'm messing around with the remote control, and there's an Xbox icon pops up on the screen. I think, what's that then? So I click on it. It turns out my television's got a built-in Xbox. Literally. And I had a couple of controllers upstairs. So you pay a little subscription. You can play all the games you want. Well, it's not little. It's, you know. Anyway, that's how I got back into games. And I went from Indiana Jones to the Harry Potter one. Well, it's not Harry Potter. It's Hogwarts. Hogwarts Legacy, which I got absolutely into. And then I bought a Mafia game. And then I bought a game called Ghost of Tsushima. So you're looking at about 2 to 3 months on each game. And I have now hit absolute pay dirt with the sequel to Ghost of Tsushima, which is called Ghost of Yote. And this morning, for the first time in 30 years, I actually found myself thinking, oh, I wish I could take the day off and just spend the entire day playing my new video game, my brilliant video game that I really broke the back of this weekend, worked out the techniques that I was doing wrong, got the hang of things. It's not entirely irrelevant to the conversation we had in the last 2 hours, actually, but that sounds quite weird, so I'll explain more in a moment. But I know I'm not an addict. For example, I didn't take the day off. Spoiler alert, I'm here. I didn't take the day off to play my video game. I absolutely accept that anything that involves dopamine is addictive. Anything that delivers a sort of chemical hit to your system is addictive. It is absolutely right that this should be an official condition, and it is, but it needs greater recognition. And although recognition is increasing, it can only get bigger. So what I want you to tell me is this. What's the difference between playing too much video game and having or worrying that you've got an addiction? And remember, there's no age on this. You might have an 11-year-old who you think is addicted. You take the game away and they can't cope. Cold turkey. Think about cold turkey. It's a form of chemical addiction, albeit that it's not chemicals that you're putting into your body. You deny your child access to their console, and they behave in a way that defies rational analysis. Those aren't the only games I've ever played, by the way. Thank you for your recommendations, but I'm probably across it these days. It's been quite the year. But I don't know what addiction looks like, and I want you to tell me. So, well, there you go. That's the question. In the context of video games, what does addiction look like, and how do you know if you've got it? All right, hit the numbers now, you will get through. 0345 6060 973. And think about the difference, the distinction between perhaps playing an unhealthy amount but not being addicted and actually having a medical condition. Where is the line between excess and medical condition? Because I honestly don't know, but I think between us, we should be able to work it out. Hit the numbers now, you will get through. 0345 6060 973. When does video game enjoyment become video game addiction?
This is LBC.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations, and Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
Big motoring world are big on value. But what does that mean for you? Well, we price check our cars every day, so we can give you the best price. Guaranteed. In fact, 95% of our cars are priced below market value. Big Motoring World, we're big on value. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
Big, big, big motoring world.
There's so much more to enjoy when you fly in Emirates Economy. Spacious legroom, delicious regionally inspired meals, complimentary drinks, and with the latest movies, TV shows, music and live sport, some of the best entertainment in the skies. And our family services make your journey simple and fun. Plan your next trip and start the holiday early in Emirates Economy. Fly Emirates, fly better.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
22 minutes after 12 is the time. It's an interesting question, isn't it? Because you might think you know the answer. When does an enthusiasm become an addiction? In this case, video games. But actually, you don't. I would today, if I could, spend 12 hours playing Ghost of Yote. I'd stop off for Jaffa cakes and toilet breaks and things like that. But I would enjoy nothing more today than sitting down and playing 12 hours of this game that I am absolutely enthralled by at the minute. Obviously, if it was getting on Mrs. O'Brien's nerves, or if there was something that she wanted to do, I would happily go and do it. And I probably wouldn't do 12 hours on the game if she was in the house, because I would, in many ways, rather spend time with her. But there is a space, there is a universe in which she'd be out at work all day and I would be on the PlayStation for 12 hours straight. And I'd go to bed and close my eyes and I'd see the game unfolding in front of me. And a bit like Tetris is always bad for that. So if I have that feeling, were I to indulge it for what, a month? Would I be addicted at the end? How would I know I was addicted if I was still loving it? That's something that this text is signed Hamlet, and I have no reason to doubt the veracity of that name, although it's not a name you come across very often in Kidderminster. The biggest difference is enjoyment, James, says Hamlet. To enjoy or not to enjoy, he didn't write. That is the question. Especially when you're self-medicating, even if you're not aware of it. If you're enjoying the game, you're probably safe. My addiction was at its worst when I was playing, even when I wasn't enjoying myself. Yeah, I can't quite imagine that. Actually, I genuinely can't quite imagine that. And as Becky says, if you can't cope without it, or your partner tells you they are lonely despite you being there, then you need to back off a bit and put the controllers down. You see, you wouldn't say that to someone reading books, would you? You wouldn't say to someone, I wish you'd put that book down and pay more attention to me. There's something about video games that lend themselves to... Well, I don't know. Anyway, let's get some calls on. Jace is in Measham in Leicestershire. Jace, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James. Good to speak to you. I come from a background of playing games for a long time. So I'm 48. I've been playing since I was 7 years old, and yeah. I got my first Spectrum.
Same.
I've gone.
What was your favourite Spectrum game?
Oh, Spectrum. It must have been, I think Black Hawk was one of my first ones. Good that game. Was like a Harrier game. So from there, now I'm the parent of teenage children. So obviously I've seen gaming come from where we started into where it is now.
Yes.
And on my journey, I've gone through gambling addiction and close to gaming addiction myself at various points. So okay. I can identify where it is.
Where is it?
I think the
so just to
line...
be clear, with gambling you crossed the line into addiction,
I
but
did,
with video
absolutely.
Games you haven't. So you've got a clear, well, you've got a clearer idea than me of where the line actually is.
That's what I think. Yeah, and I think I see it now in the children at the moment, because with games being made particularly to keep them
yes.
Enthralled and to then push onto the microtransactions, which is what the model is. It's the games are built in such a way that they feed that addiction with those continuous dopamine hits, and games like Fortnite and Roblox do that very, very well. And the way that I identify that now within my teenage son is the level of reaction when you take them away from that. So to the point where there's a family day out, we're going out swimming, for
yes.
example. He'd rather stay at home and play the games.
I'm going to be quite strict this hour.
Well,
it's only 45 minutes. Simon Marks is joining us at 2:45. I'm going to be quite strict because, swimming can be a bit rubbish. I'd rather play my video game. That's not a sign of addiction. Unless they loved swimming last year, and it was the best day out, or the best day of the week, and now they can't. Do you see what I mean? It's a bit like saying, why don't kids play outside anymore? To which I used to respond by saying, have you seen the latest video games. I mean, are you mad? Yes, of course they're not going to play outside. They can go to the moon and back in like real time, virtual reality. So that's not quite enough. I don't want to go out, Dad. I want to carry on playing my game.
But I think it's how that reaction manifests in terms of anger and the need to, as soon as they get back from being taken out, the first thing they do is go on and jump straight back on that game. I think, I enjoy games every single day, but it's that very fine line, I think, with those reactions. And I think when things do affect outside of where you are, that's when it becomes that addiction. Now, I've been in the position where I played a mobile game at a very high level, and I was staying up till very late at night or stopping my work to play these things on certain timed events. So it is there is a line, and addiction to games is an actual thing.
We may not be able to draw the line as completely clearly, but just a couple of sentences, what is the difference between the new games, like your Fortnite? I know it's not new, but it's new in context, and a traditional game like Call of Duty. Is Fortnite's more addictive because it's got these financial mechanisms in it?
I think as well as the financial, I think it's the fact that there's that always online thing. So you and I, we know the benefit of playing a single player game and having that experience yourself.
Yeah.
But it's very much about that shared experience they have now. And the thing where they've got the constant feedback with their friends and that constant shared experience that's always active, I think.
It just exacerbates the addictive element to it, and that sense of it's going on when you're not there. Can you get addicted to the kind of games that we play, that I play?
I don't think so, James.
Because you finish them. You finish them.
There's an end thing, isn't there? There's not that constant next game, because you've got an end point to reach.
And that, that's the comforting thing. Maybe so. There's something else that is going to be partly dependent on age or on generation. Is the kind of games that you are playing. There's always one. Read this to you in a moment, because I sometimes think that you don't listen to a word I say. I literally predict what the lazy tabloid position on a topic will be, and then 10 minutes later, someone will literally send in the lazy tabloid position on the given topic. Not Jace. I'm talking about this texter, which I will read you after the 12:30 headlines. If you want to join this conversation, have another crack at where that line is. So a really clear line. Jace has nudged us towards it, but we're not mapping it yet on how you know that is an addiction as opposed to, for example, an unhealthy level of enthusiasm or a perfectly reasonable stroke rational preference for playing games to doing almost anything else. You can't overestimate how, I know this sounds a bit like sort of saying, you can't underestimate how amazing heroin is. Not that I'd know, but you can't overestimate how amazing games are. Everything addictive delivers enormous pleasure, doesn't it, in the first, second and third instance. But how do you know when you've landed in the fourth instance? It's just coming out to 12:30. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Matt Hewitt has your headlines.
A serial killer has pleaded guilty to the murder of teenager Victoria Hall in Suffolk in 1999. It's the first admission of guilt from Steve Wright, who will never be freed for killing five other women. LBC understands the MP Dan Norris has been arrested for a second time on suspicion of further sexual offences, including rape. He's been suspended from Labour since April. And the Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, says stripping Lord Mandelson of his peerage should be looked at if he is convicted of committing crimes. There's an allegation from the latest Jeffrey Epstein files of government emails being leaked to the disgraced financier. LBC weather. Cloudy for most, with spells of rain in the north, bright spells in the far west of Scotland and in central, southern and southeastern England. A high of 9 degrees.
This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
People are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
The customer service is really good.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door. The postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. Affordable cover with a cash payout. Search Sunlight Cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payment. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Sainsbury's to Lidl and saving £33 on this week's big shop at lidl.co.uk/save. Which means a stocked up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands, and your fresh five a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value.
Prices check 26th of the first 26. Sainsbury's also sell other products. See online for more details.
Go on, leave the never-ending laundry pile, quiet flat, and empty fridge at home. Hop on the train and go into the workplace zone with Southeastern. Whether you're heading in for a change of scene, to share ideas, or enjoy a lunchtime chat with your colleagues, with our great range of tickets, we've got the one to suit your commute. Buy yours now on our app or website and pay no booking fees. So, go on, go in.
Southeastern.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
12:33 is the time. So lazy tabloid analysis or lazy tabloid opinion, which of course is not confined to tabloids, but also to the people whose brains have been melted by generations of encouragement not to think about anything. This is their contribution to a conversation about video game addiction. There is no such thing as video game addiction. This is a new clinical term made up to make irresponsible and lazy parents feel better about their poor parenting. Says an idiot. James in Maidenhead is the opposite of an idiot. I like Gabor Mate's definition of addiction, James. He describes it as any behaviour, substance-based or behavioural, that provides temporary relief, pleasure and craving, yet results in long-term negative consequences and an inability to abstain. It's the second bit that really defines it as an addiction for me. Is it causing negative consequences? And if it is, are you able to abstain from it? Which is why I'm supremely confident that, much as I am enjoying Ghost of Yote on the PlayStation 5, I am not addicted. Not least because I can finish it, and then the joy will be complete. Mark's in Wigan. Mark, what made you pick up the phone?
Hello. Hi, Tom. This is not the easiest thing for me to talk about because it's not something I'm proud of.
Okay.
But for a long time, now like 10 years easy,
yeah.
Most of my days have been waking up, turning on my computer, putting on my headphones, you know, looking at a screen, playing a game I've played to death, not really getting much enjoyment out of it anymore. And that's as a really it's as a way to kind of escape responsibility. Day to day living kind of thing, putting things off.
What sort of things?
Well, I can see from looking about now, my house is pretty messy, so that would be the first thing to avoid. Just looking at the mess and dealing with it. I'm getting better at keeping things tidier now, but
And do you work?
I don't have to, because I got some money from family. I'd be able to, you know, just coast by and get by. But yeah. I started working in a care residence last December.
How's that going?
And It's pretty good. The people I work with, the good people to work with, and I think that makes all the difference. I'm studying to be a nurse as well.
Oh, wow. Maybe you've been a bit hard on yourself.
I have started to turn my life around quite a bit in the last few years, but there is still quite a bit of work to do, mostly at home. The bit outside of the house, that's fine. But when I get back home, that's when I kind of just kind of like get sucked into staring at a screen and keeping myself kind of placated,
keeping yourself occupied and engaged. Do you not like being alone with your thoughts?
Well, I have to be used to that, and I've no issue with that because I've always been kind of living on my own and on my own, so I wouldn't say that's a problem.
Well, what is it that you're... For you to ring in and describe it like this means that somewhere, subconsciously, you know it's quite a big problem.
Yeah. I've got some long-standing issues with depression, and
right.
I was diagnosed with autism as well not too long ago, about 6 years ago or so.
Okay.
6 or 8 years. And I know that that will tie into like a repetitive behavior or like when it comes to, you know, like I said, first thing I do is...
And how many hours then would you, what would be a normal day roughly?
Most of the time that I'd be awake and at home. So,
would be a normal day in terms of the amount of hours you'll spend on a screen, on the computer playing a game?
I'd say 12 would be the decent average. It could even
every
be
day.
More than that.
Every day?
Not every day, but days when I'd be at home, yeah.
If you're not out, if you've not got work or something else to do, then you will only play. Here's the thing. I think it's great you've made this call, but I also hear a man who is doing lots of other things and who recognises the need to introduce a little bit more variety into your life, whether it's professional or social. So you're training to be a nurse, you're working at the care home. But the bit that you've said that I think we both know is the problem here is that you're not enjoying it when you're doing it.
That's it. Yeah, and I think that's what makes it the difference between just somebody who plays a lot of games and someone who might have, you know, that's where the problem is.
And that's why I asked about not being comfortable with your thoughts.
Responsibilities as well.
Yeah, you keep using that word as well. I mean, it's putting off chores, putting off boring things, but not... Because there must be a bit of not wanting to be... Because I get this a bit as well, or I used to, before I had therapy, in that I'd need to do something. I don't just want to sort of sit there and stew, as it were. But you don't think that's going on with you at all?
Oh, no. That's absolutely the number one problem I've got going on in my life at the moment. It is that putting things off and, you know, just being quite stationary, if you will, a lot of the time. Yeah.
And you live on your own?
Yeah, I've called you before. I think the first call that I made a few years ago, I called about cats, I think. So, yeah, I've got those cats.
If you were really, really addicted, you'd probably be putting great effort into denying that you had a problem at all, wouldn't you?
Well, I have to agree with something that the lazy tabloid guy who texted it. I have to agree a bit, but this is just from my perspective.
Yes, of course.
Because I don't agree with him wholeheartedly by any means, but the way that it's being labelled clinically, as they say, it's a video game addiction. Now, to me, I don't really think it's so much a video game addiction, it's just the behaviour that I'm adopting to manage the symptoms of depression, if you will. A lot like...
Well, you're self-medicating.
Yeah, but just like the other guy that you commented on after, where, short-term relief, long-term... I can't remember how you phrased it.
Long-term it's Gabor Mate, who's like an extraordinary... writer, and I always forget precisely how he describes himself, but he's very, very strong on therapeutic treatment and childhood trauma and all of the things that propel us into doing things that aren't very healthy or very good for us because we think that they'll fill a hole inside that can only really be filled with love and self-care. But he says that any behaviour, whether it's substance-based or behavioural, that provides temporary relief but results in long-term negative consequences and an inability to abstain, so you can't knock it on the head, is veering into addictive territory, becomes addictive.
Yeah, I did find that an interesting...
But that's what you've described.
Yeah.
He's describing you.
Well. Sure. You've heard of Sigmund Freud.
Yes, of course.
Have you heard of his daughter Anna?
I have, yes. She founded a big clinic in this country and continues to do amazing work.
right, I didn't know that. But she did a lot of work on defense mechanisms.
Yeah.
And what people do when, you know, just psychologically, where we put things off in the short term to protect ourselves, and in the long term, it can cause a problem, you know, if it goes on for too long.
Yeah.
I just found it interesting, because I do think addiction is an interesting thing. And there seems to be quite a lot of correlation there between those two quotes there.
Yes,
as well.
But maybe. I mean, the relationship between trauma and addiction is probably better explored than other motivations. But be kind to yourself, mate. I'm not going to patronise you, but you sound like a lovely bloke. And don't forget that it may be, if you were playing 4 hours a day, it would be because that is literally the best thing you can do for 4 hours a day. There are times in my life where my schedule allowed it. I have absolutely no regrets for the amount of time that I spent playing video games. But when you say that you're not enjoying it, that is for you and for me when the alarm bells go off, isn't it? Because that's what could you be doing instead? Stay safe, Mark, seriously. 12:42 is the time. Oliver is in Putney. Oliver, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I hope you're well.
I am, mate.
So mine might be a little bit different. So I went to university when COVID started.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was doing all my coursework from home. So I was on the console a lot. And I got addicted to FIFA points, which then led to me spending more time on my Xbox. So I was spending about $7.99 a day, maybe,
right. Yeah.
Which over the course of 18 months added up to about £5,000 of my university loan.
Yes. How do you know it was an addiction? I mean, clearly it was because you wish that you hadn't been doing it, I think.
So I knew it was an addiction when I would look at my bank balance and I might be on maybe, you know, £37 or something. And I'd go, oh, you know what, another £12 won't hurt or something.
Right.
When I knew I shouldn't be doing it. And that led to me, because I was financially invested,
yeah,
I continued playing more hours. And I just had to go cold turkey when I found my now fiancé, and then I had to stop completely because even phone games, I was still purchasing stuff.
Forgive me for not knowing this. I used to play a lot of FIFA, but I don't anymore because my mate moved. But what are FIFA points? How does that work?
So it like allows you to like open packs to get better players. So because I wasn't great, I was always having to catch up.
Oh,
so I was always
see
like,
that for me. That's evil, isn't it? When you can actually pay money to substitute skill or improvement. So you play and play and play and play and get better and better and better and better, and then someone else can come along and pay money to get the same.
Exactly. And when you've spent that much, it almost forces you to play more because now you've got that financial link to it where, well, I can't just stop playing now. I've spent this amount of money on it.
How easy was it when you went, to use your phrase, cold turkey? How what was that like?
I don't think I'd have been able to do it without my now fiance, because she basically made me like stop everything. She made me like physically like do hours of the uni work instead because my grades were lacking. And then I basically just started doing like, you know, secret comedy clubs and all that kind of stuff. So I just traded my £15 a day for activities on the weekend with my partner. So, and now I got a house and a mortgage, so it's all good now.
That's a lovely story. There is something there that's hard to nail, but when you hear it, you know it's been nailed. On the wrong side of the line and then on the right side of it, but still hard to pinpoint precisely where that line is. I'm spending too much money. I'm spending too much time. I'm not enjoying it. And why are you doing it? I can't not do it. That's an addiction, isn't it? I'm not enjoying it. I used to enjoy it, but I'm not enjoying it. Well, stop then. I can't stop. I can't stop. It's 12:45.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
The Epstein file tentacles reach to the heart of power in the UK. Should our police and political leaders investigate further? And anti-ICE Grammys features, is it any better here?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Every day, the noise gets louder, deadlines tighter, commutes longer, opinions stronger, and social media fakes get harder to spot. You need concise, verified, easy access to the stories that matter. You need the Bulletin app, trusted news from The Independent in a simple, bite-sized format. Download Bulletin today on iOS or Android. Bulletin, trusted news for seriously busy people.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw and you think of a way to spend £1 million.
I'd deposit regularly into a retirement fund that safely tracks the market.
It's a lucky day and you win the birthday draw.
I can't believe it.
And you buy a snake and a superbike instead.
Yeah, baby.
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search the birthday draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only. No purchase necessary.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
Go on, leave the never-ending laundry pile, quiet flat, and empty fridge at home. Hop on the train and go into the workplace zone with Southeastern. Whether you're heading in for a change of scene, to share ideas, or enjoy a lunchtime chat with your colleagues, with our great range of tickets, we've got the one to suit your commute. Buy yours now on our app or website and pay no booking fees. So, go on, go in.
Southeastern.
With over 50 years' experience, at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools, and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions, or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
It is 12:48, Simon Marks is here. Before that, very quickly, I'm going to knit together everything that we've talked about today, which you might find an impossible task, given that we've veered from Epstein to Trump to video games. But the video game I'm currently playing, Ghost of Yotei, is a sequel to a video game called Ghost of Tsushima, and I was really bad at it. I was brilliant at the first game by the time I finished it. I couldn't understand why I was playing so badly on the second game. And then I realised I'm playing as a woman, and everything is different. The mechanics are different, the relationship between strength and threat and physicality is different, and as soon as I realised I was playing as a woman, the game changed completely, which is kind of relevant to what we were talking about in the first couple of hours of the programme. And staying with that, Nigel Farage has been bemoaning the failure of the United Arab Emirates to buy the Daily Telegraph, which is extraordinary. He's accused Britain, his country, of course, of being not very straight with the UAE, which is an interesting development, given that not that long ago he said he would be deeply uncomfortable if that deal went ahead. Whether or not this has anything to do with the fact that Nigel Farage has been visiting Dubai a lot, I think he attended a Grand Prix, perhaps as a guest of the UAE government, and his position has changed. And it is to the UAE that I will turn Simon Marks's attention first this afternoon, because we talk often about how hard it is to keep up and how flooding the zone with questionable or possibly corrupt behaviour has become so commonplace that you can be forgiven for missing events. But this $500 million deal that Donald Trump struck with an Abu Dhabi sheikh shortly before his presidential inauguration deserves a little more coverage, Simon.
It certainly does, James. And the coverage, of course, has been sparked by investigative reporting done by the Wall Street Journal that was published within the last few days. Again, an example of the Journal, a Murdoch-owned publication, really going for it as far as Donald Trump is concerned. We've seen similar actions in the last few days from the Journal accusing the White House of lying over the killing of Alex Preti in Minneapolis. But what the Wall Street Journal revealed is that 4 days before Donald Trump's inauguration in January of last year, a $500 million stake was purchased in World Liberty Financial. That's his big crypto business. And the purchase was made by a UAE Sheikh Tahnoon bin Zayed Al Nahyan, who is the national security advisor to the government of the UAE. It was two of his aides that made the purchase and joined the board of World Liberty Financial. Now, this was never disclosed to the American public. And remember that when Donald Trump was first president, back in January of 2017, we went through all of this kabuki because people were concerned that there were going to be conflicts of interest between business and statecraft. And so Donald Trump at one point showed up surrounded by, you know, stacks of documents, and he signed a piece of paper claiming that he was putting his businesses into the control of his family and he would have nothing further to do with them. When reporters in the room asked to see the papers, they were told they couldn't possibly look at them because they were confidential documents. The suspicion has long been that many of those binders were filled with blank pieces of paper. This time round, we haven't even gone through the kabuki. So here is a president of the United States whose crypto venture is now 49% owned by the national security advisor and senior figures within the Emirati government. We know that Trump's family crypto investments have inflated his net worth by $1 billion on paper since he became president. And the conflict of interest question arises in a couple of different areas. I mean, first of all, the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times reporting that the Emiratis secured an agreement from the Trump administration for the United States to sell hundreds of thousands of advanced AI computer chips to the Emiratis, even though national security figures within the Trump administration said that they were concerned that those AI chips via the Emirates could end up in the hands of China and be used to develop Chinese weapon systems. And then there's the not insignificant issue, James, of the genocide that is taking place in Sudan. The United Arab Emirates is widely accused, it denies it, but it is widely accused of being the principal supplier of weapons to the Rapid Support Forces, the group that is trying to unseat the Sudanese government. And it is absolutely clear that the Trump administration is under continuing pressure to do more to make representations to the UAE about those arms supplies to the RSF. Indeed, in a paper that was published last week, before we knew about this acquisition of World Liberty Financial, this 49% stake in it by the Emiratis, the Atlantic Council published a paper saying, given Trump's close ties to Abu Dhabi's leadership, there is reason to doubt whether the White House would press the UAE to curtail its support for the Rapid Support Force. And that was before we knew that 49% of his crypto venture had been sold to the Emiratis. I should say that the White House insists, and this is a quote from White House counsel David Warrington, that President Trump performs his constitutional duties in an ethically sound manner, and to suggest otherwise is ill-informed or malicious. So that's the official White House position.
We've come a long way from Jimmy Carter's peanut farm, haven't we? Just a quick word on Steve Witkoff. The family of Steve Witkoff, Donald Trump's envoy to the Middle East, came out of this deal $31 million better off as well.
Yeah, and the polluting aspects of money from the region are everywhere within Donald Trump's inner circle. The Saudis made a significant investment in Jared Kushner's private company before Donald Trump came back into power. Across the board, there are questions that can be raised about conflict of interest. But the extraordinary thing is that the checks and balances here have completely disappeared. There's been no massive amounts of pressure for any kind of public inquiry into all of this stuff. I mean, I saw that Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts was saying over the weekend, Congress needs to do its job. It needs to grow a spine. Well, I mean, you could utter that like a mantra on a daily basis over the last year. Congress has largely disappeared from the lives of the American people as this president puts his pedal to the metal and tries to see exactly how much he can get away with in terms of expanding executive power, accruing an ever-increasing amounts of wealth for him, his associates, and his family, and doing so at a time when Americans across the board are saying in poll after poll after poll that they are concerned about the rising costs of groceries at the supermarket every weekend, far more than they are impressed by the growths of their 401k retirement accounts under Donald Trump's stewardship over the last year.
And our very own Timu Trump, Nigel Farage, has changed his views on the UAE's attempt to buy the Daily Telegraph by complete coincidence. Shortly after, he enjoyed a 10 grand jolly to Abu Dhabi to attend a Formula One Grand Prix. How the world turns. We're short of time. I've taken up too much on this. What else do you need to tell us about?
Well, first of all, we should talk very briefly about Donald Trump suing his own government, because that hasn't attracted enough attention. A $10 billion lawsuit that he's filed over the leaking of his tax records to the press by a former IRS employee, the equivalent of HMRC, who was sent to jail for that leak. Donald Trump said over the weekend he might settle it. He's thinking of settling the lawsuit.
With
and
himself.
It'll be okay because he won't keep the money. No, he won't keep the money.
Okay.
He's going to give the money to charities, unnamed charities. Mm. But remember, it's going to fall to his own Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent, his own Attorney General, Pam Bondi, to play a role in determining the size of any settlement of that lawsuit. And then there is the absolutely stunning news last night that he's going to close the what he calls the Trump Kennedy Center now for 2 years for a complete refurbishment and reconstruction. Of course, the reason why he's really doing it is because an array of leading artists and performers have all said that they will not perform at the Trump Kennedy Center and are appalled by his decision to name what is supposed to be a living memorial to slain former President John F. Kennedy, to name that after himself. So his decision now, he's closing it for 2 years from July for complete refurbishment, the refurbishment of a building that was only renovated at a cost of $250 million in a project that ended in 2024.
That's extraordinary. So this is the presidential equivalent of taking your ball home, I think.
Yes, exactly. That is exactly what it is. All dressed up as a desire to endow the city with the greatest performing arts centre in the world when the city already has claim
to that
host
title.
The greatest performing arts centre in the world.
Trimen, we'll talk again this week. I am absolutely certain of it. In the meantime, do look after yourself and stay safe. That's it from me for today. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back on Global Player, which is free, or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. I just had a look at the Global Player at the weekend. I was looking for something. The Mystery Hour podcast, it's like self-contained, incredibly popular, actually, and it keeps extraordinary company on the Global Player. But that little Mystery Hour, they're punching its way up with all the big names. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Swarbrick, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
I think Mystery Hour is good for the nation's mental health at the moment.
I think you're right.
I think that's a big part of it.
A light relief, isn't it?
Well done, you.
Thank you.
Well done, James.
Carry on.
A little compliment to start the week.
Marvellous.
Now, a big question this afternoon has kind of half been answered by the Prime Minister. Should Peter Mandelson really remain a Lord? Downing Street says Sir Keir Starmer believes the former ambassador to the US, Peter Mandelson, shouldn't be a member of the House of Lords or use the title. That's an interesting bit of what he's saying here, use the title. He added that the Prime Minister himself does not have the power to strip him of the peerage. Worth remembering that amongst all the embarrassing stuff, there's much more serious stuff. Lord Mandelson leaking confidential Downing Street documents to Jeffrey Epstein when he was business secretary. We'll talk about Prince Andrew, formerly Prince Andrew, at 2. And those Grammy winners speaking out against racism. Good on them.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. In the last few minutes, Sir Keir Starmer's made it known he doesn't believe Lord Mandelson should sit in Parliament any longer. It's because of further revelations about the peer's links to the paedophile financier Jeffrey Epstein. Downing Street's ordered an investigation into links between the pair while Lord Mandelson was a minister. Emails released by US authorities suggest Lord Mandelson sent Epstein internal discussions from the heart of the UK government. And bank statements appear to show the sex offender sent the former Labour spin doctor more than £50,000. A serial killer has pleaded guilty to the murder of teenager Victoria Hall in Suffolk in 1999. It's the first admission of guilt from Steve Wright, who will never be freed for killing five other women. David Wilson, professor of criminology at Birmingham City University, has a theory for his change of heart.
Steve Wright had an older brother, two younger sisters, half-siblings. And I imagine that the reason for him changing his plea at this 11th hour may have been as a consequence of them putting pressure on him. Steve Wright didn't overnight develop a conscience.
LBC understands the independent MP Dan Norris has been further arrested on suspicion of rape, sexual assault, voyeurism and upskirting. The 66-year-old was suspended by Labour after his original arrest on suspicion of historical child sex offences last year. Palestinians have started to enter the Rafah border crossing between Gaza and Egypt. The limited reopening is a key part of the Israel-Hamas ceasefire. 20,000 people are said to be waiting to leave for medical treatment. Noga Tanapolsky, a journalist in Jerusalem, says use of the crossing will be heavily restricted.
Israel's not relinquishing its control, and it says that it will not allow more than 150 people, pedestrian traffic, on foot, to cross, that no commerce, no aid will cross through. And that's 150 people at most. We don't know if that's in each direction or just in one direction.
The price of gold has plummeted in what's being described as a brutal sell-off. It hit record highs in recent weeks because of economic uncertainty, but Donald Trump's nomination to head up the US Central Bank soothed investors' nerves. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 33 points at 10,256. The pound buys $1.37 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with spells of rain in the north and east, bright spells in the far west of Scotland and in southeastern England, a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Matt Hewitt.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan, Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations, and Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there. Good afternoon to you. Some news that's broken, I should say, in the last 10 minutes or so around the Peter Mandelson affair connected to Jeffrey Epstein. Sir Keir Starmer has said he believes Lord Mandelson should no longer sit in Parliament. Following those new revelations and photographs showing the peer's much deeper links to the paedophile financier Jeffrey Epstein, Downing Street said Sir Keir Starmer believes the former ambassador shouldn't be a member of the House of Lords or use the title. He's been on a leave of absence for some time now, partly caused by the fact that he had that US ambassadorial post, but he will have to make his position clear, or it be made clear for him one way or another in the coming weeks and months. This comes as the country's top civil servant has been tasked with urgently reviewing information on links between Lord Mandelson and Jeffrey Epstein while he was a government minister, which looks to have included leaking documents, leaking emails to Epstein when he himself was in power and connected to government. Talk to Andrew Marr about all of this in just a moment, where it leaves the government, where it might leave Lord Mandelson and his peerage and his place in the House of Lords. But in an interview to the BBC in January, when these new, previously unknown links to Epstein started to emerge, Lord Mandelson was pressed on whether he witnessed any wrongdoing while spending time with Epstein. Here's how he responded.
Because I was a gay man,
in his circle. I was kept separate from what he was doing in the sexual side of his life. I mean, he in a sense had three buckets of people in his life, the business and the financial, the political and the academic, and then what he was doing with young women. It's possible that some people crossed over, but I didn't. And I think probably the reason I was separate from the third of those is because I'm gay.
Well, later in the same interview, Lord Mandelson was asked whether he would apologise for his association with Epstein after Epstein's conviction.
I want to apologise to those women for a system that refused to hear their voices and did not give them the protection they were entitled to expect. That system gave him protection and not them. If I had known, if I was in any way complicit or culpable, of course I would apologise. But I was not culpable, I was not knowledgeable of what he was doing, and I regret and will regret to my dying day the fact that powerless women were not given the protection they were entitled to expect.
Well, Andrew joins me now. Andrew Marr, presenter of Tonight with Andrew Marr on LBC. You'll know it's Mondays to Thursdays here on LBC. Andrew, good afternoon. Thanks for joining me. Why don't we start with the Downing Street statement from 10, 15 minutes ago or so. That's a big bit of pressure now, isn't it?
It's absolutely inevitable from what we learned today, the latest revelations about Peter Mandelson. You know, he has been almost out of the door for a very long time. This is the end of the end. It was inevitable that Keir Starmer would try to strip him of his peerage or ask him to leave the House of Lords. But Starmer's critics will say, too little, too late. You should have known, you should have taken action earlier on. So I don't think it helps the Prime Minister particularly. I don't think it helps the Labour government particularly. But it certainly doesn't help Peter Mandelson, of course.
The question of a peerage, who can remove a peerage and how?
That's very complicated. It has to go through the King. I think there has to be Act of Parliament and all the rest of it.
When you think about, when you think about Epstein and the King.
Candidly, I'm not entirely sure. This all came around, if you remember, Lord Lebedev. Russian-connected. Right. There was a lot of talk about him being stripped of a peerage and kicked out of the House of Lords. And it took a very long... It was very, very hard that time. I think if the person concerned is determined to try to stay, they can make it very difficult. Now, I assume that Lord Mandelson, as he still is just about, is in the mode to do everything he can to avoid embarrassing Keir Starmer and avoid embarrassing the government. That's why he left the Labour Party last night. And therefore that he would be willing to leave the House of Lords. In the real world, you know, he's not going to turn up there and speak and be taken seriously ever again. After the first fall over Epstein, he tried quite hard to come back. You know, he wrote pieces for the Times newspaper. He did interviews for the BBC and elsewhere. And it was perfectly clear this was stage one of the comeback tour. That is finished. That's gone. It's never going to happen again.
So are we likely, do you think, to see a kind of... a speedier version of what we've seen with the late, the four